Hey, Spittin' Chiclets listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Buddy, welcome to episode 252 of Spittin' Chiclets, presented by Pink Whitney from our friends at New Amsterdam Vodka here on the Barstool Sports Podcast family. What's up, gang? A little over 3 weeks left in the season. A lot of jockeying for those last two wildcard spots, but we got some real-life news we got to talk about too in a little bit. But now let's say hi to the boys first. Producer Mikey Granelli, what's going on, man?
What's going on, boys? I'm doing pretty well, despite the fact you have a national pandemic on our hands, but we'll get to that.
Wait, we're not going to talk about your Bachelor reports online?
I love The Bachelor. It's my favorite show in the world. I'm fully sold on The Bachelor.
And it was the biggest nightmare finale of all time. We don't need to dive into it for all you Bachelor fans, but this Barb is quite the character for those of you who do watch.
Barb, she's America's most hated person in the entire country.
That's a prime example of why you don't go on those reality television shows. They kind of direct the script as to how they want it. And not saying that she got, you know, led that way, but holy shit, she made a fool of herself. And I feel bad for that Peter guy because that whole family is, they took a major, major L.
Yeah, how is that relationship going to last now? The mother hates the girl and she just blasts her on national television.
Yeah, we don't need to get into it. People are probably already fucking punching their
hanging up on us. This,
yeah.
That's the voice of Paul Biznasty Bissonette. What's going on, buddy? You still on the road? That doesn't look familiar behind you.
I'm in Gainesville, Florida. We're at my girlfriend's apartment. Yeah. We had a good trip to South Beach. South Beach is quite the place. Oh my, very expensive. I think I saw more Lamborghinis than Honda Civics. Completely unpredictable weather. When you go to Florida, do you ever go to South Beach?
I would not go to Florida ever again before I ever went to South Beach. I hate it.
It's a different place. I ended up going to some unreal meals. You guys will, this is karma kicking me right in the ass. You guys know I'm cheap and I usually, you know, skitter off to the bathroom when the bill comes. Well, I was tipping 20% the whole weekend and I was going to these restaurants. I think this is kind of how it goes in South Beach. They add 18% gratuity no matter what. So I was tipping 38% the entire week and
it must have killed
found that at one out the hard way. And right now, I'm a little upset. I think it's still affecting me. So we can move on from that. So if you're going to South Beach, just be wary of that 18% gratuity added on. It doesn't even have to be a party greater than two. Just me and my girlfriend just took an L on that as well.
Wow. So if I think it's a lot of the place, it's the judgment call of the server too. So they're probably prejudging it too. Anyways, last but not least, Ryan Whitney, what's going on, buddy?
What's up, guys? Not too much. I'm here hanging. I've had a lot of issues. Some people have had some serious issues with me on my coronavirus take. Now, all right, why don't you explain kind of what's going on and then come back to me. I have to speak.
Okay. Yeah, this story, you know, I'm not going to lie. We were kind of joking about it early on, maybe a month or so ago, because, you know, I'm 47 years old. There've been one of these viruses every couple of years that kind of pans out or flames out. Nothing really happens. Well, this one obviously is a different story, and I think we're all kind of learning as we go here. And, you know, last week, even as recent as a week ago, we were kind of cracking wise about it. Well, now it's a different story. The whole fucking country of Italy is shut down.
People aren't going to restaurants in most of Europe, and we're starting to finally see effects here in North America, particularly the sporting world. And this just come over the wire literally minutes ago. The Columbus Blue Jackets home games are going to be closed to the public. Ohio has an order forbidding mass gatherings, which I don't know how they come up with these numbers, 500,000, depending on the city.
San Jose's 1,000. They said anything over 1,000. That's why the Sharks games, too, but that's in like a week. Sorry to interrupt.
That's all right. And so right now, admission is limited to home and visiting club personnel, credentialed media and broadcast partners, essential club and arena staff, and NHL officials. And literally 5 minutes before we started recording, San Jose followed suit. They were kind of the first ones that had their local government tell them they couldn't commiserate in their arena, and they were waiting to see basically what to do. Columbus had to make a decision first. Now the Sharks, they're going to play their last three remaining home games without fans at their arena in San Jose. The Leafs and Habs, they've grounded their scouts. They're not flying their scouts anymore. Harvard administration, they barred their teams from competing. So the poor Harvard hockey team, they can't even fucking play this week. And they had to forfeit their series versus RPI. And it's ironic because RPI is the place that had a person with the coronavirus. So we'll jump it over to you. I know you had some opinions on this as well.
Okay, so when we talked about it last time, I think I said everyone that's overreacting, people are being pussies about it. Was that exactly what I said, Grinnelli? Yeah,
pretty sure. I'll quote you on that.
I'm somebody who's kind of known with my friends. I can admit when I'm wrong, you know? Sometimes I'm a guy that's just, you know, that if he makes a mistake, he's going to come to the bench and he's going to say, guys, that was on me. That was my turnover. That was my guy. I've been doing it my whole life, so I'm able to say I was wrong. In the end, I do not think people are being pussies. I'll take that back. This has gotten way more serious. I did some research. I've been doing some reading. I've been doing some listening. Been doing some news watching. And it's pretty serious. Now, I will also say that hysteria?
Hysteria. Yeah.
Hysteria? I have a tough time saying that. Always have since seventh grade. I remember in front of the class, I couldn't say it. That's a little crazy, and I think part of it, the news shows the pictures of the germs that look like the blowfish from the ocean, like the odd-shaped puffer fish, like, you know, those germ pictures?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like, those are scary, and those are like, in those are the main picture of the tweet, along with, like, man dies in New Jersey, which did happen, but sometimes they don't necessarily include many of the health issues that these people are going through. All right, so having all said that, if you were listening to me and actually got rattled, you're the biggest moron of all time. This is a hockey podcast, okay? I watch golf, hockey, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Office episodes from the early seasons when you could say funny things before people turn into babies and you can't say shit, and then I play golf. That's literally what I do. So if you're looking for, like, any of our takes on the coronavirus, I don't know shit. If you didn't understand that, you're a moron of epic proportions, because I do not know anything. But now that I'm trying to read and I'm trying to learn, I'll say this. It's scaring me, because in a sense, when you start seeing the world shut down, and I feel so bad for seniors, and not just the athletes that had, like, lacrosse canceled, Ivy League. I think three of the top five teams in the nation in lacrosse were Ivy League schools. Their seasons are over. Seniors trying to win a national title, boom, done. That's heartbreaking for a kid. And then also, you got to take the side of the seniors in college that are just like, oh my God, I got senior spring at Georgia. I'm going to go after every single girl I've wanted to in the last 3.5 years, but I've been too much of a hussy. And all these kids have everything ruined, because there's going to be no school soon. There'll be no college in the country that has kids in the next 2 weeks. They're all going to be gone. So that's what's scary, is like the panic. And I think the media does add to that. I definitely think that. But I got a text I got to read. Okay. And this is from a guy who I'll say is in the know in these type things, work related. I'm not going to say his name. But he writes, it's a little long, so bear with me, guys. And sorry for the coronavirus talk, everyone, but this is actually what's taking over the world news, including now a hockey podcast. So, as I said before, take this with a grain of salt. We all have had many concussions, but just we have to talk about it. This is the text. So I've been in the weeds with this thing since the end of January because my boss is obsessed with it. I've had to build logarithmic, crazy word, logarithmic death rate models for each country with reported cases. It likely originated when a Chinese national who was also a Canadian citizen stole vials of harmful pathogens from a lab in Winnipeg and brought them back to study at Wuhan University. Sometime in early December, this strain of flu was contracted there, and it started spreading like wildfire. It went for at least 4 weeks before the Chinese even acknowledged it publicly. They are known to doctor any number they release to public and likely have undershot their cases/deaths by a factor of 10. It is very real and serious for everyone. But the key takeaway is that the average age of all death cases across the world this far is 80. I think our cohort, even if we contracted it, will be fine because we are young and live in the medical capital of the world. It will continue to grow at an alarming rate in the U.S. as the growth rate in cases has yet to plateau. So does that not scare you a little bit?
Oh, big time.
Now, I'll say, when you start shutting things down like this, you got to think that why can't they play the games, right? If the games start getting canceled, then I'm going to be in a real panic. But for right now, why do you have to cancel games? Have no fans in the arena. That really sucks, and it's going to be weird to watch and weird to play in. But the games will still go on, and all these people who may be quarantined, hopefully not, will be watching the games. Imagine the ratings in the next few weeks if these cases continue to get worse and worse. So I just think that it doesn't make sense to me as of right now, because as scary as it sounds, to shut down everything, if they start canceling games, like, is that really what you have to do? You can't make measures of having no fans. The games have to be canceled? Is that not a little overreaction, or am I not knowing anything? Like, I need your guys' opinions on that.
Well, I mean, we're talking about a game here. I get that there's a major business involved and a lot of money exchanging hands, but I mean, I don't know. I feel like we're in a bad dream at this point.
Yeah, go ahead.
It feels like it's got to be like almost all or nothing, because like, why can you go to the movies if there's, say, 200 people there?
Well, I know.
How's that different than a game that maybe only 200 people show up at? It feels like you can't half-ass it. You either got to say shut everything down or fucking shut nothing down.
And then we're going to Hawaii. We're going to Hawaii now. Rich man problems. Jesus. He's going to Hawaii. but in seriousness, you talk about what's going on, and are you scared to travel? And what happens if you get there and you come back? You got to be quarantined. And you ask all these questions.
Well,
Hold on. Let me just say this. But what do I stop living my life? Like, I'm not going to stop living my life. Maybe I sound like a mort. Maybe when I'm dying from it, you'll be like, oh, remember Clown Boy with the ears sticking out talking about he is going to keep living his life in Hawaii? Well, he's dead. So maybe I continue to just live my life until the government says, like on the news, breaking news, don't leave your house. Then it's panic time.
Well, in your situation, considering you're going to Hawaii, you're on an island, right? What happens if it goes to the extreme that all flights are being canceled? I mean, I guess it's an okay place where you get to hang out as long as you have to, considering that flights
are canceled. Yeah, but I'd be broke in like 3 years.
well, that's what I'm saying. I'd be like, I'm back on South Beach.
So in the end, guys, everyone listening, I'm taking it more serious now. Everyone that I had so many messages, some of you people. Are you that hurt? Are you that mad at me? Like, take it easy, dude.
I can't believe you would speak to all of your followers about how much people are being pussies. How could you even use that language and call people pussies for what a disease that could kill everyone?
Dude, relax. I was watching like live from the players as I was saying. I don't even remember saying it.
All right, well.
Yeah. All right, just a couple other notes while we're at it. So far, Austria, Germany, Poland, Norway, and Slovakia have all canceled their hockey seasons, or what was left of them. The Swedish government announced basically the games that were being played Wednesday night will be the last of it. They're going to decide whether they're going to keep on going or just cancel it in the entirety. The Connecticut State Hockey Tournament got canceled, but Massachusetts will go on.
Yeah, what the hell?
Right.
Why are they doing it?
Why is Mass still doing it and Connecticut not? I don't get it either. And one other note, Biz, that you had on there, the Simpsons clip that said the Simpsons called it 100% fake. They never called it the coronavirus. Okay. I know you didn't make it up.
Yeah, somebody mentioned it to me. I'm like, RA would know if they called this one. They pretty much did I mean,
they
Simpsons
predicted
have predicted
a lot of
how
shit.
Many ridiculous things.
Way more than you would ever guess, but that one, they did not call it the coronavirus way back in the day. So as much as I'd love to give them credit for that, I can't.
And now I hate doing the, like, what if, because nobody knows anything. But if this goes into the fall, then what happens? It's like, that's the scary part for me, is no one has any clue when this is going to kind of die down, if it dies down at all. So
I heard it was supposed to die down in the summer, and then it's supposed to pick back up once the weather gets bad again.
Oh, good. Yeah. So I could have like a last summer of a golf hurrah. Sorry, babe. This coronavirus is going to kill me right when the fall hits. So I'm going to play 400 times in June, July, and August. It'll be crazy. I'll need a couple massages, but I'll get it done.
Yeah, I think it's clear. It's going to get worse before it gets better. I mean, if people are getting sent home from work right now, then, I mean, they're going to probably be out for a little while if it's already at this level.
Would you go to Hawaii in a week and a half if you were me?
Do a Twitter poll just like we do with everything else, and then you'll base your trip on our fan base.
I've been told planes are like clean right now. They got the new air filter systems plugging in there, and it's, I mean, nobody's in airports, so you got to think it's
I'm
not
in
that
New
bad.
York City. I'm going to die way before you do for going to Hawaii, Whit.
Yeah, the thing that sucks is when I did call the people cowards, I'll change it. I didn't think about like the chance of a kid going to see his grandmother, and like that's what's happening. Is you're bringing it to people, and it's so contagious. And then there's a couple possible cases where I live now, and then you start thinking of like your parents and all older people. It's like if someone who battled chemo, imagine how much this could affect them. Their immune system isn't as strong, so it starts to just get a little scary when you think of it that way. And I hate to bore people, and this is all bad news, but this is what's happening. So we'll move on to some hockey stuff.
Absolutely, man. It's real life stuff. So we will move on from that. Tuesday night, fun night in the NHL. Shitload of playoff teams or teams battling for playoff position were going at it. Personally, I thought Tampa-Toronto was probably the best game of the night. The Leafs nipped Tampa 2-1 in a possible first-round preview. Biz, what were you watching the other night?
Well, I said it last podcast. They just play up to their competition, and I don't mind that first-round matchup for Toronto if they end up getting it, far better than the one against Boston. William Nylander continues to impress, 31 goals on the season now. Of course, Austin Matthews chips in for his 47th, and you know, before that game, they were under fire a little bit. And it's like these people need constant reminders that this core group is still very, very young. There's not a lot of older leadership in that locker room, you know, as opposed to the guys they brought over like Kyle Clipper. They got, I guess, Muzzin around a huge, huge fucking boost to that blue line with Morgan Rielly stepping back in. And from what I saw and from what I've been reading online is he didn't skip a beat. So they get a much needed player back in the nick of time right before a nice little playoff push. But a very good game by the Toronto Maple Leafs. And that's if they're playing like that, boys, if they catch stride here, look out. Anderson also stood on his head, Whit. I don't know if you watched the game.
I saw the third period. I was kind of back and forth. I was flipping all over. There was a bunch of good games, but Anderson was awesome. But I don't know if you saw the Justin Bourne had a tweet I responded to. I think it was this morning, kind of talking about their win. And I agree, Biz. They could give Tampa a great series, but the way he describes him is pretty good. So he says, my biggest Leafs takeaway, that's their recipe. Freddie Anderson has to be all-world or it just isn't there. When he can negate like 5 grade A chances against per game alone, they're freed up to do what they do best, and they look pretty darn good. When he's average, they don't. So you mentioned he was phenomenal. Like, if he's not phenomenal, they struggle to win games. That's not exactly a recipe for success. So I think that they definitely do play up to who they're playing against, and that shows that in the playoffs they could get going. But I would have a really hard time picking them to win a series in the first round whenever the playoffs do start. And Florida's not that far behind them, are they?
No.
Or is it 4 or 5 points?
I think it's only
3 right now.
3.
And they have a game in hand, but I mean –
yeah.
We'll see what happens moving forward.
But Matthews, there's a
big log jam on both sides of the conference as far as teams fighting for that wild card position and that third spot in their respective divisions, excuse me.
And absolutely. Matthews has he needs 2 more goals at home. I think to tie, maybe 3 to break the single season record for home goals by a Leaf. So that'd be a pretty cool stat that early in his career.
And yeah, to get 50 too, I mean it's wild.
He got the game winner, which was his 47th of the year. And also worth noting, too, is Morgan Rielly returned to the lineup. And that obviously was a huge factor in shutting things down defensively for Toronto because they were.
Oh, yeah. Biz said that. And that guy, dude, he gets out there. He played the second most minutes. I think Dermott played a little more than him. But in the next 2-3 games, Rielly will be at 26, 27 and changes their entire team. We've said that for a long time when they did have the stretch where they really struggled.
And Biz, you just mentioned, you know, the races on both sides. Well, there was one game that fact that on each conference, the Canucks beat the Isles 5-4 in OT. Both teams got at least a point. but Vancouver jumped up to the second wild card spot while the Isles dropped out of the wild card for the first time in a couple months. They got two games in hand on Columbus. They're only a point back, so it's not all that dire. But Vancouver, man, is this one of those teams we were talking last episode? Are they going to get in or not, man? I mean, if Markstrom's out, but this Demko, former BC goalie, he's been fucking outstanding lately, Whit.
Yeah, that game was drunk. I think it was 2-1 Vancouver 3 minutes in. I couldn't stay up for the whole thing. I lasted the first two periods. The Islanders, while having not won a game in what seems like forever, I think four of the losses are in overtime or shootout now. They've played some really good games, and they're just while not playing great defense and goaltending not being fabulous, they've had also some shit luck. So as much as I dog them, that was a good game. But I just took away, like, Pettersson is so nasty, and so Barzal too. He made a couple moves in that game. He came out of his own zone a silky head fake to somebody, don't remember who it was, then came in on kind of a one-on-one, two-on-two spinorama, hit the post, almost in my mind made me think, like, I said he's not exactly a superstar yet, so he shows that. But then Pettersson, like, he had this dish over to Foley for the goal.
Who's been unbelievable since getting acquired by them.
He's got 24 goals now, I think. Maybe 27, right around there. But the pass Pettersson made was so perfect. I don't know if I'm saying his name right. Don't get mad, Vancouver. The pass was so perfect. It was this sauce that had speed on it, and then he just buried it. So fun to watch. Quinn Hughes, I think he had two assists. If not, he might have just had one, but he was flying around.
Your old teammate in Pittsburgh, Gino, he got two goals, one assist in Pittsburgh's 5-2 win. The Pens got that nice little cushion between them and the wild card. They're not dropping like the Islanders did there. I mean, another team, they've got an unreal amount of injuries, and they're just fucking hanging in there. And Gino's probably getting unheralded this year. I think we've almost taken him for granted because he's been such a superstar for so long. You forget this guy just keeps getting it done night after night. Biz?
I would have hammered them against the New Jersey Devils. I think they had lost 8 of their last 10 before that one, and they needed to get back on track. And which is weird is they'd been overachieving all season long with all those injuries in the first half. And now that they're slowly getting guys back and getting healthy, you know, all of a sudden they're starting to struggle heading into playoffs. And I remember taking a little bit of abuse online because I didn't have them in my top three teams as far as teams that might go on to win the Stanley Cup. They're just not peaking at the right time right now. So maybe they can feed off that 5-2 win against the Devils and get things going here. And I think four of those losses in the 8 out of the last 10 were to four of the worst 6 teams in the entire league. So, talk about a team playing down to their competition during that stretch. So let's see if the Penguins can get things going.
So Malkin has not spoken to the media, I think, in the last couple of days because – Iggy's sick of it. I read an article in The Athletic by Rob Rossi, who just talks about he's had enough. He's going to let his play do his talking, and what a year he's had. And the article this summer we talked about where he really went in depth of his life and what he thought about his career and back home in Russia. And he talked about him and Mike Sullivan have a conversation where Sullivan told him, like, you have great years left. And this year he's been awesome. This would be the first year he ever ends the season winning more faceoffs than losing. He's never done that. And right now he is. I think there's 7 guys in the NHL averaging at least 1.3 points per game. He's the only guy in his 30s that's doing that. 74 points in 55 games. I wish I was a little better at the quick math, like in terms of what that translates to an 82 game pace. Maybe somebody could help me there, but domination by him. And I think the team really needs it because as they've struggled, you've seen that when he doesn't go, I mean, it hasn't been easy for them. And Sid's called himself out in terms of having a couple off games and efforts that isn't very common for him. And I mean, dude, Biz, you said it earlier that the loss of Guentzel, it hits you harder than you think it will, right? I mean, Russ has had a great year, but still, it's losing a goal scoring, a legit top line player that can get you 40 goals. I mean,
he was leading their team in scoring when he went down.
Yeah, obviously there's going to be times where they struggle. I don't think anyone thought it would be this bad.
Just jumping back to Vancouver for a sec, Brock Besser also returned to the lineup as well. He didn't score on Tuesday night's game. And I just said the word outstanding. I was talking about Thatcher Demko. He's been pretty good. He hasn't been outstanding. I don't want to get fucking drilled for that. He was
on a bit of a run there when he was actually the glorified backup. Now that he's been relied upon more heavily, he has been struggling a little bit. At least compared to his older numbers. R.A., since we're on the Pittsburgh topic, did they not just land a top prospect out of college?
They certainly did, yeah. We had a couple of undrafted college free agents. The Pens picked up Dartmouth forward Drew O'Connor. He had 38 goals in 65 collegiate games as a freshman. He was on the All-Ivy second team, the only freshman on either the first or the second team. He's had 17 goals, led the ECAC. He was the second most in the NCAA of any rookie player. This kid sounds like he's a bona fide sniper. And I mean, you know, you throw him out there with Gino or Sid, and if you're talented, man, you're going to produce. Are you familiar with this kid at all, Whit?
I asked a couple scouts about him, and they said that he's very big and can move. So right away, you know, a guy like that's going to get a chance to be able to score in college. I don't think that his upside is necessarily like his hockey IQ, but I think that he can move, and he's a big kid, and he's shown that he can score at the college level. So he's definitely going to get a good look.
I feel like there's like a group of teams. And when I mean a group, I mean like two or three teams that always land these guys. It's either the Penguins, the Rangers always end up getting the college guy. And I think they just actually got one as well, didn't they? Another one?
Yep. Rangers signed another undrafted free agent, center Patrick Kotarenko out of Michigan State. He was with the National Training and Development Program a couple of years ago. He'll report to Hartford of the AHL while on an amateur tryout. The California native played in the development program, like I just said, with current Rangers defenseman Adam Fox and Ryan Lindgren. So he knows a couple guys in the organization, but because these guys signed after the trade deadline as free agents, they cannot play in the postseason. But there was one other signing who was a guy who was drafted, the LA Kings, Biz. They signed 2019 draft pick Alex Turcotte to the 3-year entry-level deal starting next season. He'll join your old squad, Ontario Reign. The 19-year-old just finished his freshman year at Wisconsin, 9 goals, 17 assists in 29 games. Biz, I know you had a few other things you wanted to address with the old LA Kings as well.
Well, I saw that tweet towards you the other day about an LA Kings fan complaining that they've been on a bit of a run lately, and he thought that it deserved to be mentioned. And you know what?
Fine. Hey, bud, guys are going out before they play your team. Like, you guys were the joke. Like, you win six in a row and you're in last place. It's honestly not a big deal. Sorry to burst your bubble.
Well, it's not all bad, and one guy in particular I wanted to talk about was Jonathan Quick. You know, he was obviously a major contributor to those two Stanley Cups when they went on that run. He's been playing a lot better as of late, and people forget this guy. You know, he had hip surgery. He's been on the IR quite a bit, and it seems like he's finally finding his game here towards the end of the season. I mean, in his last five starts, he had his first shutout of the season, by the way, against the Leafs when the Leafs rolled in there in that 1-0 game. It ended up going to a shootout. I think William Nylander was the only guy who got a puck past them all night. You know, he's posted a 9.51 save percentage and a 1.4 goals against average in those last five games, and he's won all five of them, as I mentioned. And just happy for him because he's such a good guy. And I'd imagine, you know, playing at that level for so long, and then all of a sudden, you know, with the injuries and not playing as well, that pressure, especially with the contract he got delivered, it would probably weigh in on him a little bit. But just going and diving deeper into their organization, I actually talked to Mike Stuther, who's the coach in the American Hockey League. I had him as a coach. I was talking to him about their prospect pool, and he likes a lot of them. And right now they're ranked second as far as prospect pool of all NHL teams. I believe New York Rangers are at number one. But Alex Turcotte, obviously being a big part of the future, was a fifth overall pick. He's a centerman. They got Akil Thomas. I think everybody knows who that is. He ended up scoring the winner for Team Canada at the World Juniors this year. We're going to get him on the podcast soon. A few other guys that he mentioned was this Bjornfoot, who's right now playing in Ontario. Now, a lot of comparisons get thrown around when talking about prospects. He mentioned Lidstrom as one of the guys, but as far as efficiency, so this Bjornfoot, he plays with efficiency, okay? He's very calm.
Great word. Great word.
Very calm in his demeanor. He's not wasting energy out there. He's got great vision, unbelievable hockey sense, and he just learns fast. He's not making the same mistakes over and over. So he's another guy. He's a left-handed defenseman who's coming up. This Arthur Kaliev. I hope I'm saying that well. He's an American kid. He lit it up at the World Juniors this year. He had 51 goals last year for the Hamilton Bulldogs of the OHL. He's already got 44 so far this season with 98 points. So there's another stud and a steal in the second round a few years ago. They got that Grundstrom who's been, he's a bit of a wild card. He's been up and down a little bit this year. They have their goalie of the future. This Cal Peterson kid is the real deal. He's got a nice seasoned veteran in Jonathan Quick to teach him the ropes in order to learn how to become a true professional. Mike Anderson's another guy who kind of came out of nowhere. He's a left-handed defenseman playing with Matthew Roy. I'm going to get slaughtered because I actually played. No, it's Roy. He's an American.
LA Kings fans are just loving this right now, just rubbing all over each other.
They're one of the best teams at drafting. Mike Fiuta has done an incredible job there. When Rob Blake took over as general manager, too, he was getting thrown to the wolves. This is a rebuild, and I think he's done an incredible job. They have 8 picks in the first 3 rounds of this draft coming up this
That's
year.
And they're going to be high.
Well, yeah. Well, you'd hope so if they end up getting lucky with the lottery ball. They got of course a first rounder. They got 3 second rounders and 2. Oh God, I'm struggling here, boys. It's a lot of information for me to.
Yeah, you're going on like an NHL Network like rant about the Kings.
I am. You're right.
Yeah. So I mean, I've never even heard you have this many stats on one team. Another guy, fans are going to be loving it.
Another guy they got is that Fagamo. Am I saying that right?
He makes the shoes?
No, not Ferragamo, you idiot. Fagamo. He lit up World Juniors for Sweden as well. So they got some good things in the pipeline, and I think as a Kings fan, it would be very comforting to know they have still a decent, solid core group there with Doughty and the Kopitars, and I don't need to keep listing them off. And as one of the best teams with the best prospect pools, I think they're going to be in good shape. So there you go, LA Kings fans. We just stroked you off for a little bit, and sorry about my Kings rant. And thank you to Mike Stuthers for talking to me today and wishing me a happy birthday after letting me pick his brain.
Wait, Grinnelli, Elliot was on NHL Network chirping you for – I'm on his side. I mean, you got to be able to, like, make the guys look good, not just throw his bald spot on the front page of your TV.
Yeah, just trying to get a new producer Chase into the mix here. Good. I'm not going to throw him under the bus, but I will say I did not make those promos.
Okay,
but yeah,
Elliot,
yeah,
you heard it.
Unacceptable.
Here.
Speaking of angry fans, Grinnelli, probably a good time to let people know we have our Rick and Red Deer shirt that dropped, right?
Yeah, we've dropped 2: one in red and one in white. So relax, Rick. Your shirts are on sale now.
There we go.
All right, there we go.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
And one quick error there. It was 8 picks in the first 4 rounds of the 2020 draft for the LA Kings. So the shocker that I made a mistake while trying to list off all that shit.
I thought you crushed it.
Thanks, bud. Thank you.
I really did.
I actually wrote down a bunch of stuff for the New Jersey Devils as well.
And well, I was going to say, did you want to get into that now? Or do you want to?
We can only do one of the top 5 worst teams in the league per episode.
Well, I didn't really want to go into the team. I was going to go more so into Mackenzie Blackwood, but you know.
Oh yeah, we could. He is unreal. I saw an argument that he could, if you look at certain numbers, definitely be the rookie of the year.
Absolutely, he should be in the conversation. Some people would think I'm crazy, or you'd be crazy for saying that. He has the second best 5-on-5 save percentage since December in the entire National Hockey League. Behind who, guys? Guess what? Guess who he's behind?
Hold on. Give me Connor Hellebuck.
Darcy Kemper, baby.
No, he's been hurt.
Well, I thought it was a Coyotes guy.
What a dummy.
I was teeing you guys up because you guys like to stroke off.
Oh, Tuukka.
Yeah, Tuukka.
Oh, you know what, though? People get you convinced in this city that he stinks. Morons. Rugo, I'm just talking to you. My buddy Rugo thinks Tuukka stinks. I'm like, you watch every Bruins game. How dumb are you, doctor, to think that this guy stinks? He's unbelievable every year. Best Bruins goalie they've ever had, you ask me.
And as far as that Calder Trophy race, RA, you read The Athletic more than I do, but that Dom, and I can't say his last name because it has
Lucision is, I believe, how you say it.
Yeah, he's an intelligent guy. He comes out with some awesome articles. Blackwood's War, Wins Above Replacement. An advanced stat to measure a single player's impact on a team getting wins is 2.6, which is the highest not only amongst rookies but amongst all goalies. In that time, the Devils have played at a 110-point pace with him in the net. They could pitch. They also, as an organization standpoint, they can have potentially 3 first-round picks coming up this year. Their own, Vancouver, if Vancouver makes playoffs, acquired via Tampa Bay and Coleman trade. And, of course, Arizona's, unless it's a top-3 pick, because the pick is lottery-protected. So if Arizona misses playoff and wins the lottery, that pick moves to next year. So that Ty Smith is one of the most promising prospects, mobile puck-moving defenseman. He was a WHL Defenseman of the Year last year. So a lot of positive things. Also moving into next season, if we want to dive deeper into the Devils, they have between $27 and $32 million in cap space available, depending on what they decide what the cap is going to be at. Whit, I think you mentioned him within the last month, that Jesper Bratt.
Oh, I saw him walk around Pareco. With his filthy little open of the hip moves, he's been good ever since he came in the league.
Yeah, he's very silky up front. So they got a lot of things to look forward to. Of course, we've talked about Jack Hughes quite a bit. Just a difficult season for him. He's only had 1 assist in his last 14 games. Doesn't have a ton around him. I think Simmons was playing on his line for most of the year before he got moved over. But I don't see that as a negative. I think that's going to, you know, going into the off season, he's going to be very amped up to, you know, get in the gym, put on some weight, and he's going to want to come back and have a big year. So, and then of course we've talked about Hischier, and I think I'm going to have to take the L on that one. As Whit, you took one on earlier in the episode with admitting you were wrong with the coronavirus. I think we were a little hard on him. I talked to their insider Pasha, my videographer, who's probably the biggest New Jersey Devils fan in the entire world, surprisingly, because he's from Vancouver. So when they were winning all of their championships when he was growing up, he just completely jumped ship, that coward.
What a bandwagon fan, Pasha.
He seems to think if he can get a few weapons around him and the offensive numbers come up, he could be a Selke-type candidate player moving forward. And at a $7 million cap hit, I think we were really wrong about his top end. So there you go. There you have it. Both organizations have been struggling mightily throughout the season. But they got things going in the right direction.
Probably worth noting that Joe Thornton had 3 goals and 4 assists in his first year in the league, and he's turned out all right. So sometimes that first year is a struggle for guys.
This kid, and hopefully Corona doesn't take down the world championships for the men as it did for the women, but that would be perfect for him to get over there. And I think he'd have a lot of fun. He'd be playing with some better players. It's like the new start to a season, the same way we playoffs are for some guys. Don't worry about him. I think he's going to be great. And I also think many people said when he was drafted, do not expect much the first year. They kind of knew it wasn't going to be a Patrick Kane or Austin Matthews type situation where he lit it up from the get-go.
So the good news is I think the New Jersey Devils have found their starting goaltender moving forward. From some people I've talked to within the organization, they seem to think he has an incredible work ethic and just a recipe to learn. And I think moving forward, they'll be all right. As far as him winning the Calder Trophy, considering they're so far out of the playoffs, I don't think you can consider him. I think that he finishes 3rd. I think that would be a fair number for him.
Yeah, right now. I mean, this Olofsson's been real good. McCarr, Hughes. I don't know. Yeah, top 3, boom.
Yeah, boys, I want to jump back to Tuesday, too. A couple other guys I want to recognize. Nicholas DeLaurier from the Ducks. He had a first period natty hattie. He was the fastest in Anaheim history. He went from 4 goals to 7 goals overnight. But I also want to give the shout-out to the organization, the Ducks, as well. Wednesday night, they donated 19% of all merchandise sales and half of the 50-50 to UC Irvine. That's where Jay Bomeister was treated. That's where the 19 came from, the 90%. So they were donating some extra money on his behalf. So a nice little gesture there by the Ducks organization. But how about this kid from Carolina, Whit? Morgan Geeky, first NHL game, has 2 goals and an assist, scores again in the second game. He scores 3 goals on his first 3 shots on goal in the NHL, dude. And actually, dude, he's the 7th guy to do it since 1997-98. I would have guessed like maybe 2-3 guys did it, but 7 dudes have done it. Like,
as far as scoring on their first 3 shots?
3 goals on their first 3 shots,
I believe Christian Fisher for the Arizona Coyotes scored 4 goals on his first 4 shots. Am I wrong?
He's on the 3-for-3 list, so yeah, he must have been him. that as well. So shout out to him as well. And the Bruins, they played in Philadelphia. They gave Carter Hart just his third regulation loss at home this season. And the Bruins, the first team to pass 100 points. We got a pretty good viral clip out of that one. Fucking Z sending Sean Couturier's stick up to the
heavens. Hold on,
that
though.
That had to be 50 feet in the air. Go ahead.
I didn't even get to talk after the Morden Geeky thing.
Okay, so
I got to bring up a little other fact about this kid and his family, because they're buzzing right now, because this kid's in the NHL, lighting it up easy, making the game look simple. Well, his brother was just picked second overall in the WHL draft. So you can imagine soon enough, he'll be riding the bus, probably getting Ronnie Textall and a lot of people back home riding the bus from Prince George to Everett to Moose Jaw to Regina. So congratulations. I mean, you could tell the geeky kids are feeling it.
No doubt about it. And same game, Sebastian Aho, 2 goals, 1 power play, 1 shorthanded, and an assist. He's been having another monster year for the Canes. It keeps them in the wild card one spot. They keep on chugging along. Got some injury news to get to. Nate Dogg, our buddy, Nathan McKinnon, he left the Kings game early Monday with a lower body injury. He's going to miss 1 to 2 weeks. Kale McCarr just returned Wednesday night. But how about this for the Avs, man? They're missing McKinnon, Calvert, Grubauer, Kadri, Rantanen, Burakovsky, Namestnikov, and Colin Wilson. That's 7 of their top 9 forwards and their starting goalie, man. It's a miracle they're still where they are right now, eh, guys?
It just shows that this team, if they can get healthy, is for real. I think that when they're at their peak, and if they can get everyone back, and who knows if they actually will, but when they were on, man, I think they could actually go for a run and win the Stanley Cup. Because especially when McKinnon and Rantanen, I don't know if it'll ever actually happen again this year. I mean, that's why luck is involved so much in going on a run, because if these guys could ever get healthy, who knows what they could do. McKinnon, they're saying week to week, or
1 to 2 weeks. He's 1 to 2 weeks.
All right. So, I mean, what's left in the regular season? 3 weeks?
Yeah. 3 weeks. Season ends 3 weeks from Saturday.
All right. So you got to think, if he gets back and you get 2 games in before playoffs, you don't worry about him. But the other guys, you just got to hope that's going to change very quickly here.
We had another injury too, Biz, in your neck of the woods. Spark plug forward Connor Garland, he suffered a lower body injury as well versus Calgary. He's listed as week to week. That's the last thing that team needed right now, Biz, to lose its leading goal scorer. He's got 39 points in 68 games, third in points as well.
Yeah, they've just been very inconsistent down the stretch here. I'm sure most of you have seen that graphic they put out since acquiring Taylor Hall, which I thought TSN was just stirring the pot a little bit. There's been a lot of other factors other than Taylor Hall coming over, and the reason why they're 2 games below 500 since he has moved over. Very difficult loss. The good news for the Coyotes moving forward here, they have 12 games left, 8 of which will be at home, and they are control a little bit of their own destiny as far as playing teams that they will be competing for those final playoff spots with. But yeah, just a lot of inconsistency. They were up 2-0 the other night on Winnipeg on the road as well, and then they ended up blowing that one 4-0 for the Jets. So, you know, it's tough sledding right now, and losing a potential 30-goal scorer is very difficult.
And they didn't mention that their star goalie's been out pretty much the whole time since Hall's been there, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that has to have something to do with the team not being as solid as they thought they might have coming down the stretch.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
All right, boys. I think it's about time we had to send it over to Kevin BX. I'm not even sure we mentioned we had him yet, did we?
No.
No, we didn't.
Talk of
actually,
that.
Yeah, we had him on a couple of years ago. It's been a while, and I happened to bump into him randomly. We were in, I think, either St. Louis or Dallas, one of those cities, and we ended up bumping into him, bringing him on, and had a nice long chat with Kevin BX. So without further ado, let's send it over to him. Well, our next guest is making his much-anticipated second appearance on the show. He was a hard-nosed D-man for 13 NHL seasons, racking up 808 games between Vancouver and Anaheim. Today, he's a budding media star between his TV gig with Sportsnet and his new podcast, Kess and Juice, with longtime teammate Ryan Kessler. Welcome back to Spittin' Chicklets, Kevin Bieksa.
Thank you. What an intro.
That was very good, all right.
A hard-nosed defenseman. I like that. I don't know what the hell it means, but I like it. I like the sound of it.
I saw Ari's Instagram. He was up 2 hours ago still, so I'm surprised. That was a solid intro right there.
I was up. I ate breakfast at 7:30, pot of coffee. I've been ready to go. So how's the podcast going? I was listening to it earlier. It's pretty good
podcast
shit.
Podcast is good. Obviously, you guys are at the top of the mountain, right? And we're way at the bottom, but we're having fun with it right now.
You know, try to give you a little chicklets bump here, you know what I mean? Get some listeners
appreciate the support. Kessler is, if you've listened to any, he's getting a little bit better. So he's obviously a pretty entertaining guy, and you play with him, Whit. And I told him when we started this thing, I go, don't try to change who you are, right? Like, you're a prick. You're a miserable prick.
Yes.
Be a miserable prick. Don't be the nice guy, right? Like, I'm a little bit of the more of the nice guy. You're the prick. So we're starting to figure out our dynamic. Like, you guys got a dynamic here too, right? And it works.
It works. I'll tell you, I can't tell the difference in whose voice is whose. It took me about 20 minutes of listening to figure out. I think you two sound exactly alike.
It's a fucking insult right there. Starting things off.
No, it's actually a good thing, because when you don't want to show up and you're a little tired, you'll just have him give both opinions and you guys can get away with it.
No, because Cass is like, if you're not talking, I'm not talking, Juice. Fuck this. It's just silence.
It's funny, the first couple episodes, and I love Cass, right? But I have to chirp the guy. But the first couple episodes, I got my notes out and my questions, and I'm looking at his camera. I don't see shit, right? Sitting there, you know, like leaning back in his beautiful house and his office. And so we're starting to figure it out.
Where's he at right now?
He's in Michigan.
Yeah, he's got a nice little compound on the water, right?
Only place he never bought anywhere we played, and he only had this place in Michigan, which is beautiful.
Oh, he always was renting.
Always renting.
That's. I wonder what guys end up thinking. Like, Horkoff, remember, had this huge, awesome house. But then you got to deal with selling and stuff. So there's times when buying's great, and then renting, you're like, see you later, I'm out of here. It's just so much easier at times.
Well, if you get traded or whatever midseason, then you have to deal with all that garbage. Yeah. But he's always on long-term deals. But just that was his advice that he got.
Now, he's still technically an employee of the Ducks. Have they put any sort of parameters on, like, what he can and can't say? Is he just, like, fucking, like, daring them to, you know, do whatever?
I don't think he's asking permission right now. I think he's blazing his own trail. Like, sometimes I scratch my head, and I'm like, can he do this? And then I ask him, and he's like, do whatever I want. Right. Sounds good. I mean, he can do him, I guess.
Yeah, right.
I think everyone was aware of your humorous personality. Did you expect him to get in the media right after your plan?
I don't know. Like, I always enjoyed, I always enjoyed fucking around with the media when I played, right? Like, you.
Murphy. You were always fucking with
Murph. I loved it. But he was my boy, right? When I went to Vancouver, I hung out with Murph my first year more than any other player on the team, right? Because we lived downtown. Me, him, and Burroughs, you know, at the time, we had no family or anything in town, so we hung out all the time. We developed a friendship, and then every time I was with the guy, I'd want to mess around with him, right? So I don't know if I wanted to get into the media. Like, I don't even really consider myself a media guy. I'm just having a good time.
People love it. I know, like, when you hop on, people are like, more Bieksa, more Bieksa, and I mean...
You're like uncle.
No, it's great, man. Like, we need these types of personalities and keep more people engaged. Like, even going back to when you were playing, like, shit you were doing on the ice. Who did you have laughing? Which coach when you made fun of Vern Fiddler?
Vigneault, right?
Alain Vigneault.
No, Fiddler made fun of me, and I just took it, right? Like, everyone's seen that clip, and I always joke around. I saw him actually in the rinks this year, because he's got an 07 son. I have an 07 son. We're coaching against each other. And I'm like, I put you on the map. Like, you making fun of me put you on the map. And that's what everyone knows him for. But, you know, he's one of those guys. We were just talking about Colby Armstrong, who we love. Fiddler is one of those guys who's a little bit of a rat, right? Like, you wanted to kill him on the ice. But he's, from what I heard, he's an unbelievable guy off the ice.
Now, I was listening to your show earlier. You were talking about Zach Cassian. You had him on. What, did you get in a fight with him when you were a teammate with him in an elevator?
That was one of the fights I got in with him, right? Like, he... And if you're not going to listen to any of my episodes, listen to 5 minutes of that episode when he talks about his sobriety and growing up and hitting rock bottom when he was in Montreal and he got in the car accident when they hit the tree. And he grew up, and he's a pretty impressive guy now. Like... articulate, well-spoken, yep. And I'm like, where did this come from? When I play with you, you were just a mutant, right? Like, running around, like, hitting guys, spitting, like, fighting guys, like, fighting teammates. So, yeah, we got into it the one night, and then we had the GM meetings the next morning, and we got into a dust-up in an elevator, and one of the young rookies, Frankie Carrado. I don't know if any of you guys ever played with Frankie.
He's Babcock. Him and Babs have a special relationship. Right. That's how we talk to him.
So Frankie's trying to break up our fight in the elevator at 5 in the morning, and he gets suckered, and he's got a big shiner for his meeting. So he walks into his meeting with, I think it was Mike Gillis, with a big black eye, and he's like, what the heck was that? And he's like, Juice and Cassian got into it last night.
Yeah, so. Sure. You weren't at the Roxy.
Well, I remember early in Cassian's career, I won't say the NHL player, but he'd had some junior issues too, and they're like, I don't know, this guy's going to end up getting in legit trouble. Like, he's just too much of a wild man. And then since that incident, he actually really has changed things. We're now, not only off the ice is everything better, but he's playing really good on ice. Like, he's a legit difference maker.
Yeah, figure it out, right?
No,
like,
finally.
You stay sober and you keep your stuff together, and he's married now, and he's got a beautiful little girl, and like he's grown up, right?
Yeah.
His life's all coming together, and it's awesome to see, because I saw him at probably his worst, and now he's on top of the world, which is awesome.
I want to talk you quite a bit, but you're probably going to do a good job of explaining these relationships you have with these guys and give us a more in-depth look. You spent some time with Luongo. Like, just what the fuck is this guy like off the ice?
This is one of those guys that before, like, Instagram and Twitter came out, he had no personality, right? He was just a quiet, reserved guy, loved to, like, sit in his room on the road and just play those 8-hour poker tournaments, never go out for team dinners. Then he gets Instagram, and this guy's like a comedian all of a sudden, right? He's popping out with all these, and he was able to express himself through that outlet, which was weird, and now he's turned into this personality where... I know he's trying to stay out of the media until the end of the year, but he's advising for the Florida Panthers, which I don't understand. Goalies don't really know shit about hockey, but
that's just what the legends, they get that job. You're an advisor.
Yeah, you're an advisor to the GM. Yeah. So I think he sits up top during the games, like the eye in the sky, because the one game I'm texting him and I'm like, what are you doing right now? He's like, I'm advising. And I'm like, who? Like, who are you sitting beside? He goes, I'm sitting beside the goalie coach right now. So anyways, what a personality he turned out to be. And I was hanging out with Darcy Hordachuk in your neck of the woods, Scottsdale, last weekend, and him and Luongo used to just go at it, and Hordy would just go at him all the time, like, you're overpaid, Lou, like, $62 million mistake. Like, he'd say stuff like that in the dressing room all the time, and that dynamic was one of the best things I saw in my career.
I got to play with Hordy in Edmonton. Actually, I saw him bury Ziggy Palfy so hard that he retired the next day when he was on Nashville, but... I just remember Hordy just selling every guy something. He's like, hey, I got a great deal on suits for you, Witt. Check these suits out. I was like, Hordy's a legit salesman.
To his credit, though, when I was there, he had the keys to the city. He's like, want to go to Barry Jackson? You want to go to Barry Jackson? And I'm like, what's Barry Jackson? He goes, oh, car auction. So I'm like, oh, whatever, man. So we walk in, and he's like shaking hands, walking around VIP, grabbing like a roll and eating a piece of bread while he's walking to like get a free drink. Like, this guy's connected in Scottsdale.
So, yeah, he's a Thunderbird now. The group that runs the Waste Management Open. Like the whole tournament. So he has, you have to wear this like weird little costume with the necklace, and you have a hat, and you got to cruise around, but you're running the tournament. So during the Waste Management, he's got the key to it all. He'll drive around in a golf cart.
Well, we did
he
that.
He gets me in back door every year. and well, this year I got tickets because I'm caddying for Shane Doan, but he's done a good job of networking down there. He's always been a networker.
Oh, yeah. Darcy
Hordachuk.
All you guys. Moving all you shaking. Tough guys are, right?
Well, we got to do something because we know the money's not coming in very long, right? So Hordy does it all. He's like renovating houses.
Yeah.
He's got his hands in everything, Hordachuk.
Yeah, he is. And you knew he was going to be like that when he played. Because like you said, he used to steal guys' sticks during the game while we were all playing. And he was healthy scratch. He'd steal all the sticks and he'd bring them into his car and then he'd sell them. Right? And then we come back and all of our sticks are gone. And we're like, where the hell are our sticks? And he'd go, oh, I don't know. And then we went to the security footage and actually saw him taking them and putting them in his car during the game.
It's like, a hustle. It's a hustle.
I'd say Luongo is probably one of our most requested guys that we haven't been able to get on. He just flat out, we don't even get replies from him.
Were you around when Hordy, I think he bought a car off one of the guys on the team and then resold it for more money.
Did you? So I think the story you're thinking about is he finally convinced Luongo to sell him his G-Wagon at the time. And that's when G-Wagons first came out. So he's like, just sell it to me. You know, you don't want the hassle of you putting it on Craigslist and having people come to your house. So he sells it to Horty. Horty's driving it around the city, but he doesn't change the registration. So he's getting parking ticket after parking ticket after parking ticket. And they're all going back to Luongo. Luongo has to pay for them. So he did this for like 5 months or whatever before Luongo finally caught on and said, are you kidding me? Like, you didn't even change over the registration. He goes, I didn't change the insurance either.
He's like, I'm going to park wherever I want.
That's unreal.
He used to bring, I know we're talking about Horty too much, but the guy's so entertaining. He used to bring tours into the dressing room after the game, right? So much that they canceled it. Like, no more tours, right? Because he would do it for a kickback of some sort, right? And then after, he used to take tours to, he'd take his tour from the rink to Luongo's apartment building, because him and Kessler lived on the same floor of an apartment building. I think it was like on Seymour, and there was only 2 units out of 3 on that floor. And he would go up, he'd be like, that's Kessler's suite, that's where he lives. And he'd knock on, let's see if he's home. And then he'd go, and that's Luongo. And like Luongo would open the door a little crack and see him, and he'd slam the door shut. It's another Hordachuk tour. This is like during the season.
Game day, he's trying to take his pregame nap. He's like, well, that's Luongo sleeping.
Yeah, he like go through, like, this is the pool and the amenities. This is where Luongo comes after a game and just soaks, and like he's selling it. Like, that's what he does.
I love it.
What are some of the challenges you've run into starting podcasting? You know, there's always bumps. I know me and Whit starting, you know, have some bumps along the way. What are some
Are you
bumps?
Computer savvy? Like, who's doing, like, the editing of it and stuff?
Well, not me. Yeah. We got a producer. We got the brains behind the operation like you guys do, right?
So, yeah.
No, we stick to doing us. But you guys know, like, the content part, like, by the time we talk about things, it feels like everybody in the media has talked about some of these issues, right? So how do you – but at the end of the day, people want to hear, like, players' perspective,
exactly,
right? So that's kind of our angle, is that we played the game, and, yeah, the media has their opinion, but, like, this is kind of what we think the players – or this is how we feel, and I think a lot of other players would feel similar.
Yeah, you were saying – I think it was either – like I said, I couldn't tell if it was you or Kessler, but was it saying you hate the code, like how they talk about the code in the game? Was it you saying you can't stand
that? I said I don't like
word?
The term. I don't like the term the code. I don't know. Do you like that? The code. It's like the game.
I don't use it frequently. I talk like
– the game within the game.
Yeah, it's – yeah. Yeah.
I like that's term. The way I always say it. The game within the game. Like, there's so much going on that the average fan doesn't understand.
Oh, buddy,
right?
Don't
like,
even get
well,
me
well, I
started.
Think if you're like, talking average fan, they're like, I don't even know all the rules on the ice. You're talking about an unwritten rule, the code? How do I figure that one out? It's like fans can never understand what it is. I get that. So, wait, when you went to Vancouver originally, like, who were the rookies with you your first year? Was it Kess?
Kess was, like, it was his first full year because there was the lockout the year before. So, and I think the year before that, he played maybe like 20 or 30 games.
So basically all year, that's full year.
Kessler, Burroughs got called up like a week after me because I actually got called up with Rick Rippon, if you remember him.
Yep, yep.
And he scored his first game against Edmonton. I don't think your Pronger was there, so I don't think you were there yet.
No.
And then he got, I think he broke something a week later, and then Burroughs came up. And that's kind of how it's, yeah. So Burroughs actually got in the door because Rippon got hurt.
So you had a long, I mean, Burroughs, you, Kessler, that's a long, like, you guys played together a long time after being rookies. That's pretty special to all come in together.
Yeah, it was good. All had, like, kids around the same time and married and stuff like that. So, yeah, we had a good little nucleus there.
What was Burroughs like the other night, the Ring of Honor? He must have been busting his balls.
Yeah, he's like, why didn't you come? And I'm like, well, like, I don't know.
I work.
I had stuff going on, right? So he's like, are you going to Hank and Danny's night? And I go, well, yeah, of course. I'm hosting it.
Were you there for their final game?
No, I wasn't.
At home, I meant?
No, I was watching it on TV. I don't know why. No, I wasn't there.
It was wild. They were standing up every TV timeout the whole time. It was just a very special night. Mm-hmm. And, well, obviously, the one ended up scoring the goal. He's got one for you.
No, about those two. The craziest thing I've ever seen was when – I never know the difference between Daniel or Henrik, but one of them won the scoring
– an inch taller.
One of them won the scoring title the last game of the year with, like, a dish between the legs from the brother and then
that
the
was,
other
– that was Henrik.
How sick was that against Calgary?
That last game, I think he was, like, 2 points behind Ovechkin going into the last game. And they said they pulled the coach pulled me in and Edler. I think it was Edler. And he goes, you and Kevin and the twins are going to play the whole game together, every shift, and don't dump any pucks in. Just it was the funnest game I've ever played.
Like, we want him to get the scoring title.
We want him to get it.
That's sick.
So I didn't, like, I had a couple turnovers, like, at the blue line that I normally wouldn't do, right? Just holding on to the puck, making plays, and he ends up getting a four, having a 4.9 and winning the scoring race. So we were so happy.
That's awesome, man. So, like, you were out there for every shift.
Playing so free, so free. Like, I had, like, two goals and then take two assists, like, just playing, like, the way I probably should have played the rest
of
the
game. Yeah, you're like, why didn't I do this every game?
Tripping the puck in for it. Like, it's stupid.
So the first time we had you on, you were still playing. I think it was your last season in the league. And then you finished up basically with the Spengler Cup in 2018, correct?
I did, yeah.
What were the, how did that lead up to that? Fill us in on that story.
I was on the golf course, and I got a call from Sean Burke. And he said, hey, do you want to play on the Spengler Cup at Christmas? And I said, oh, yeah, like, I'll consider that. Like, who's on the team? He goes, well, nobody. You're the first call. And I go, oh, like, I guess I'm in then, right? You need somebody, right?
So, I'm captain, right?
Yeah. So I kind of asked a few questions, and then I'm like, yeah, family's coming. Cool little vacation in the Alps, the Swiss Alps, and that was pretty cool experience. We ended up losing in a shootout in the finals.
To who?
One of the some team Finland, in right? Finland. Finland's always had my number, right? And I just, it bugs me, but, like, we had four or five chances to win where we had, like, our shooter go last, like, Zach Dalby, like, all these guys that are ex-NHL guys that should have, somebody's got to score, right? Like, come on, somebody put the puck in the
net. Juice on the bench, like, Jesus,
yeah, I'm blowing guys up all over the place. I'm doing my job here. Like, somebody score a goal.
Did you guys get a chance to talk about Bowling Green last time he was on? And how you ended up there?
Brought it up, but we can talk about it again.
People don't even remember.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
I chose it. I chose Bowling Green. So Bowling Green was the first team to offer me, like, a full scholarship, right? And it was in, like, an early bird tournament in, like, Ford Erie, like, your neck of the woods, I believe. And they were the first team. And then after one team offers you a full ride, the other teams catch on. And it's like, boom, 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 dominoes, right? So I had, like, 14 or 15 after. So you get to pick five schools to go visit. And Bowling Green was, I think, my third school that I visited, and I just, you know what it's like. Like, you just like you the know. Feel the guys and the coach and, like, the campus, and it just felt good. And it was, like, far enough away from home, but not a flight. It was, like, a five-hour drive. So it was school in the middle of nowhere and awesome experience.
You loved it there? I mean, Rob Blake went there, right?
Yeah, so, like, Blake, Dave Ellick, Gary Galley, like, a ton of NHL defensemen came out of there. That's kind of what they were known for. And I was in a good division playing against Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State. So I kind of got the best of both worlds. But I knew it was a small enough school that I would play a lot too, right? So.
And then after your freshman year, you were drafted like fourth round or whatever it was, but not much expected at the time. Like, you're still thinking, oh, I got three more years in college. I'm not even thinking about the NHL yet.
Yeah, people are like, how come you played 4 years in college? I'm like, well, I never got asked to leave, right?
I had no other option.
I drafted my first year. I had this guy from, I think it was Octagon Sports, who was like my family advisor agent. And every year, like, he talked to me less and less. And then my last year, stopped returning my emails altogether. Couldn't get a hold of my agent my last year of college.
So your senior year, you're not even sure you're going to have somewhere to play the next season.
I'm hoping that I could get into either the East Coast League and maybe the AHL after the season if I'm lucky, right? And, like, I played hard and I was a captain and I thought I did well, but, like, our team stunk. We lost a lot of games. So, like, leading up, you're trying to set something up. I want to go to, like, the Toledo Storm, or I want to play somewhere after my last season, right? And it's February, we get beat out. And next thing you know, I'm scrambling. So Jordan Siglad, who's the goaltender coach of the Calgary Flames now, he was on my team, and he had this agent, Kurt Overhart. He goes, hey, my agent kind of likes you. Like, do you want to talk to him? I'm like, yeah, I want to talk to somebody, right? Like, so we talked, and he started representing me from then on, and he's turned into a really good friend. He got me right into the AHL. Dusted some Russian in the parking lot, and next thing you know, I was in the AHL.
Damn, so that old agent, he just didn't reach out and, like, didn't care to tell you, hey, I don't want to represent
nothing.
You.
Kind of a little bit of a scumbag move.
Well,
right?
Yeah, and he fucking lost out on probably a million bucks. Well, at least.
Good loser.
Yeah.
I don't even want to say his name because I don't even want to give him the credit, right? But my dad was like, I'm like, Dad, like, what do we do here? Like, I can't just walk into an East Coast League dressing room on my own. Like, I need someone to set this up, right?
Well, and we've had,
like,
guys on our podcast who have represented themselves agents. Nello Ferraro, so you should have called him.
But I feel like we're burying the lead here. You dusted a Russian in the parking lot. What the hell is that story?
Yeah, you guys know that story, right?
I do, but you got to retell it.
Yeah, for the new listeners.
So Brian Burke just absolutely tells the crap out of the story and loves it. So I get called up, and I haven't even played a game yet because the team's technically still in the playoff race. So, like, Sean Pronger's there. Dallas Eakins is the captain. Nolan Baumgartner's the captain.
He was nasty.
Yeah. I think Mike Keane was there. And after there was an afternoon game at the old Winnipeg Arena. So I'll tell the story quickly because it's been told a few times.
It's that good.
So we go right to the Earls on Polo Park right after the game because the old Winnipeg Arena was right down the street. Guys start drinking, having a good time. It's like fast forward to midnight now. And I'm like nervous drinking, right? Like I'm a college guy. I just got called up, haven't played a game yet. And I'm sitting with Sergei Fedorov's brother, Fedor Fedorov, who was this big, like 6'4", 230-pound Russian, like all the skill in the world. Should have been an unbelievable NHLer, but a little bit of an attitude issue, right? So I'm sitting with him and his billet dad and his billet brother, and I'm playing with my straw, play with it, flies out of my thing, hits this other little Russian on the back. He turns around laughing, big misunderstanding, and he comes over and says, "What the fuck? What the fuck?" And I go, "Relax, man. It was an accident." He goes, "What the fuck you doing?" And I go, shut up before I knock you out. And Fedorov goes like this, and he grabs my shirt, and he goes, "Don't say that." And I go, and I smack his arm off me. I go, "Get your fucking hand off of me," right? And he looks at me, he gets up, he goes, "Let's go outside." And he gets up and he walks outside. Minus 20, he's in a t-shirt, right? So I'm sitting there and like everyone's like, "Don't worry about him. Like he's just a hothead, Kev. Don't worry about him." And I'm sitting there and I'm like, I got like the biggest chip on my shoulder when I was that age, right? And I'm like, "Ah, I'm going to go see what's going on." So I get up and I go outside and he's bouncing around and he's like, yeah, "You don't talk to Russians that way." And I'm like, "Okay, whatever." So I square off with him. And then the other little Russian comes out. So now I'm fighting the both of them. And so I square off with the big boy. And then I go in to throw a punch. And I get leg kicked by the little guy. And I'm like, "What the hell? I got this little gnat like leg kicking me." So I'm like, "Okay, I'm going to forget about him. And I'm going to concentrate on the big guy." And I come in. I throw a sloppy one. I miss him. And he pops me. Then I eat a leg kick again. Right? And I'm like,
this is not going well.
I'm getting so mad inside. Like, I just want to, like, murder somebody. Right? So then finally, whatever, I connected, dropped him, like puddle of blood in the white snow, like trickled in. It was just, it worked out well.
Like a Coen Brothers movie.
Well, but that's, I was going to say, it kind of led into, when you're coming out of college, I mean, your game, it didn't really like translate to college because you're so tough. Like that's a pro hockey type thing. So you get to the Manitoba Moose and guys are like, "Who's this little college defenseman?" Like, "All right, let's see." Like yeah, you knew right away that was going to be a part of your game.
I love the way the game was, right? So then Brian Burke finds out, who was the GM of Vancouver at the time, and I'm scared. I'm like, I'm going to get sent. Call my dad. "Dad, I messed up. They're going to send me home back to..." Hopefully I get into Toledo when I get back there. And Berkey calls and he's like, "Yeah, we're going to sign you to an entry-level deal." I'm like, so the story is he heard and he's like, "I love the kid. Sign him." Never even seen me play or anything.
Oh, that's outstanding.
So it worked out well. I never talked about it for years and years and years. So I'm like, this is not a good example to be telling kids in the media. But
how long was Berkey around when you were in the organization?
Not too long. Only my first year or two.
And how did you get that chip on your shoulder growing up? Just the way it was. I mean, I know you're from
Grimsby.
Yeah, I'm from Welland. Yeah. We kind of
tell me, like, what do you think of when you think of Grimsby?
I think of the Peach Kings. That was your guys' junior C team or something.
Yeah.
And I mean, I used to go to Grimsby to play games, but yeah, I mean, everyone really from that area, you know, you have to be a little bit tougher.
Hard nose.
We used to call the GTHL, the Toronto kids, the Cake Eaters.
Oh yeah.
You know, they all nice equipment. Yeah. They all, you know, they're paid. I think their head coaches were getting paid $40,000 at the time. And we're just, you know, you kind of had to be a little bit tougher and try to bully them around.
We're blue collar. And I grew up in Ashton, Hamilton for my first, whatever, 10 years. Do you remember like the old Barton double rinks in downtown Hamilton, right in between the two steel plants? I get dropped off there at 8 a.m., $5 shinny all day long. And it was just open to the public. And it was all steel workers that would come on their lunch breaks and their shift work.
No way.
So that was my first on-ice fight, was fighting some steel worker in Stelco with no referees or anyone around. There's two pads, and you just... If you get into a fight with a guy and it's awkward, you go over the other pad and start playing over there, right? So you'd hang out there all day. You'd take your skates off at lunch. You'd walk across the street to Buddy Subs. You get a $1.99 sub, and then you go back and you play another couple hours. So you're just kind of fend for yourself, right? And I had a couple buddies that were punks, and we all started trouble, and we fought, and we won fights, we lost fights, and we just kind of hung out that way. So a little bit of a school of hard knocks.
Can you thank for your development when you're in the minors? Because you haven't had an easy road. You just spent 4 years in college, and you end up spending, what, the better part of 2-3 seasons in Manitoba?
Settle down. I had 1 year, lockout
only
year.
Only lockout year, and he was all rookie. He beat me out for all rookie team. I had fucking many points, and then someone goes, you didn't fight as many people.
You went there 2003, 2004 for a few games at the end of the year. Then
That's after college, though.
Yeah, I played four games, and just to get my feet.
And he knocked
right.
out Federer.
All right. Well, then the next year you spent half a year.
The next full lockout year, 40 points, 15 fights, 200 pounds. Like, great year. Had fun.
I was trying to make it a come up story here. I'm trying to sell. I'm trying to sell you to our.
He's listener. Like, after I couldn't get an agent to call me back, things changed quickly, Biz. Yeah.
Agent helped a lot. Oh, that was good.
So actually, though, you kind of went over it quick because you called Overhart, Sigalet's agent, and then he right away was like, dude, don't worry, we'll get you something.
Called me like a week later and says, yeah, you're going to go to Manitoba in the AHL for Vancouver. Like, where I probably should have been going since I was a Vancouver draft. Like, it's not like, why
okay,
you guys...
this is good.
Yeah.
They have like, my rights.
Seems like it makes sense, but he got that done right away and never made me any big promises or anything, right? He's like, he got me in the door, and then I had to kind of take advantage of it.
The last couple of years in the league, we have a certain amount of coaches we talk about that always get a chuckle out of guys. Randy Carlyle, I know what played under him. What was your experience playing for Randy Carlyle?
How many Norrises you got, Bianca?
That's what he was saying to me when I was like a rookie in the AHL.
I think he says that.
I walked by him in the hallway and he'd like stick a shoulder into me and I'm like, what? And he'd go, and he just got off the bike and he would ride those old bikes. Remember, you could put on 60 RPM, 90 RPM, or 120.
The Monarchs.
The Monarchs. It wasn't a Monarch. It was older than that.
And it was old. It was what he rode when he played.
And he put a towel under it, and he was just sweating everywhere, and he was just wearing spandex, and, like, that's not the first thing you want to see in the morning. So I had him in the minors, but, like, I wasn't in awe of him, but I was like, this is an NHL defenseman, a Norris Trophy winner, so I listened to everything he said, and he taught me a lot as a young guy. Fast forward to, like, 13 years later, I have him as an older guy. Not as big of a fan when I was one of the older guys, right? Just expected maybe a little bit more communication and a little bit more respect, but didn't get it.
You butt heads with him a lot?
Not really. Like, we just didn't talk a whole lot, or... A lot of the older guys seem to, and you see how he did in Toronto and stuff. Like, he's a good coach and he knows the game, but sometimes his people skills were lacking a little bit.
Right. Now, before the Spengler Cup, like, had you got any calls on teams where the no offers on the table? Like, did you kind of see basically the end coming?
No, I had calls and I had opportunities. And that's the thing. I didn't talk about it too much, but I had opportunities to play. I could have played in, like, Columbus and a few places like that. But I was selective, right?
Right.
My kids didn't want to move from Newport Beach at the time. I just moved them 4 years ago from Vancouver. So ideally, I was trying to find something really close. So I was really selective. And I'm like, you know what? If I can't get a job with, you know, Dallas or, like, some of these close teams, Phoenix, then I won't play. And I just kind of stayed and waited to see what would happen and kept some doors open and went to the Spengler just to kind of play some competitive hockey, and nothing fell in my lap, and I was okay with that.
Yeah.
So you were actually, like, ready to retire. Like, it wasn't like, oh my God, like, some guys can't get a job anymore. It was easier for you mentally, like, this is over.
I think so. Yeah, I chose, right? And when I came back from Spengler, I had options again. I talked with Paul Maurice and Mark Shipman, the owner of the Jets, at the All-Star game I was working last year, and they're like, what do you think about coming? And I'm like, And I was selective, and I was like, I just want to be honest. Like, if I'm going to play, I'll come. But if I'm not going to play, I'd rather be home with my family, right? So had some a lot of offers in Europe, but, like, same thing. Am I going to go over and live in Europe for 6 weeks and live in a hotel by myself in the middle of Gothenburg or something? Or am I going to raise my kids and hang out around Cali?
Because I've been away for 13 years a lot, right? It's like time to be around more. So where are you guys at now? Sorry.
We're in Newport Beach. Started a hockey academy there, right? So
really?
I'm on the ice every morning with my son, and we have 22 kids this year. And it's at the new arena in Irvine, California. Beautiful, beautiful.
Is that their new practice arena?
Yes.
The old one was brutal.
Dump.
What was that called?
It was like Anaheim wood inside.
Ice. Yeah. Oh my God. Anaheim Ice. Come on. That's where I don't know if you've heard the story. I went spray tanning before training camp, and I didn't tell anyone. I told them I was tan, and that's where I got in the shower, and all the orange just started.
You wouldn't look good with a spray tan.
Oh, dude, I don't look good either way. So I was like, I certainly don't look good when half of it's
just
falling off
the bottom
of the shower.
Half now.
I just puke if I saw
my hose. Tan my hose.
One thing we didn't mention, I don't know if you did last podcast, but when you broke in, Todd Bertuzzi, Marcus Nazan, those guys were
legends.
Legends in Vancouver. Yeah. They take you under their wing? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Bertuzzi was awesome with me, and he's one of those guys where he'd kind of not bully you, but if you didn't fight back at some point, he would just run all over you, right? So I was super respectful rookie, right, to those guys especially. But we kind of butted heads, or not butted heads, but I fired back at him early in the dressing room the one time. And I remember he was like, holy shit, you know. And then awesome. Had him on as my first guest on the podcast. He's doing really well now. Kind of took a little absent, like 10-year span there, right? Maybe not that long, but he wasn't around a whole lot.
Right, there was a lot of shit going on, and then now it's like I see him every summer, and I just love the guy. Like, and I would guarantee that with you, he's probably like, I fucking love that kid. Just chirp me back, like right away. He's like, I don't know, but then he's like, yeah.
Not chirp him like in a respectful way, but he's doing I think some TV now for Detroit, and he was really good. Like he's starting to. It's like all these guys get educated after they're done playing, right? Like he's like joking around. He's been reading some books, but he was super articulate.
I want to go back to when you get traded from Vancouver to Anaheim. How bad was that for you? Were you pissed off with a certain circumstances behind the scenes people weren't aware of? Was it financially related? What was that?
I had 1 year left on my contract, and the GM told my agent after the season, listen, we're rebuilding this team, so... out of respect for Kevin, we'll allow him to go wherever he wants. So, it was a little bit of out of respect for Kevin and, like, we want to get rid of this guy's contract and let some of the young guys come up. So, whatever, right? Understood that. So, they were actually good because I was able to choose wherever I wanted to go. So, right away, San Jose calls me, Doug Wilson, and is like, we want you. Like, come down here. We want to meet with you. So, I fly down for the day with my wife. They wine and dine me. They're promising me this, that, term of the deal. And then just the business of hockey, that ended up falling through. And then the Anaheim thing was kind of one of my plan Bs or whatever. So I didn't really want to go to Anaheim at first.
Yeah, because you guys hated each other.
We just hated each other. And I just didn't know how I'd feel playing hockey in Southern California. But I loved it. Like, I'm still there.
I'd say the number one thing that sticks out from Anaheim right now in my head is the Superman punch that ended up going viral. And I don't remember who you ended up punching, but
a couple times.
Well, you were like, it's no big deal. I've done that a million times.
was that planned or had you done that before?
I've done it a lot. And like I've done it times where I've missed. I did it once to Aaron Voros, and I skated from the far blue line, and he came off the bench. I tried to meet him when his leg came off. I missed him, and I slid into the other. So playing against, remember you in Anaheim?
Yes.
So what happened was we're skating around, and this guy chops me in the leg before, like in between the first and the second, before the referees are on the ice. And I look at him, I go, what the fuck's your problem? And he goes, F, like, fuck you. And I just hung out with the guy in a charity event earlier that summer. So, like, I'm just, wires are crossed, right? Puck drops. Bobby Ryan changes from one side to the other, and I see this guy's leg, because Randy's doing that thing with his stupid thing with his finger.
Oh,
like,
right when the puck drops.
And he's doing this, right? I'm looking over, and Bobby Ryan takes off, and I see this big mutant come off the board. So I drop my gloves to the far blue. I sprint over, Superman punch, miss him, slide into my zone, get back up, and get to him before the linesman break it up. And then I broke his orbital.
It's just like...
felt so good.
Flashbacks of the Russian.
Yeah, like to actually really want to kill someone and then 2 seconds later break their orbital, I mean, I would guess there's no more satisfying feeling.
Poetic justice. That's the only time not the only time, but usually I have respect for the guy after, and there was no respect.
So do you get road rage?
I don't think I do, but everyone tells me. The one time we're coming back from a team dinner and this guy kind of like cuts me off, and I don't say anything, right? I'm just taking it. And then all of a sudden he like stops, and then he like slams on his brakes, and I'm like, what's this guy? And then he pulls over the side and he opens his window, and he goes, fuck. I'm like, teeth coming on. I just spit from the checklist. And he goes, F you. And I go, what? And then we're like, we slow right down, and we're like just mother effing each other in the car. And then I go to the rink later for the game, and Getzlaf saw the whole thing. Getzy's driving behind me, and he goes, what's wrong with you? And I go, what are you talking about? And he tells me the whole thing, and I'm like, oh, that didn't happen. He goes, I was right behind you. I was watching you guys, like, you were like swerving, and you're driving like 20 miles an hour on Pacific Coast Highway fighting. Like, and he's like, pull over. I'm like, where? It's a 4-lane road. Like, there's nowhere to go.
So I guess, rage.
So when your wires cross, you probably forget everything that happens.
Yeah, but I'm trying to calm down.
Well, what about now? Like, coaching, is it still like, Are you snapping on other coaches or anything, or is it just way different now that you're not playing? Like, you still have
combination.
That temper.
It's a combination. I've snapped one time this year.
Really?
But I like to set the example for the kids, right, and keep, because once you become unraveled, they're all like at the age where they're going to lose their minds too. There's one coach in particular from London Junior Knights that if I ever see this guy again. He was one of those idiots too, has like a shaved head and like a little like line of mohawk hair on the top. Like
dude, you're a coach and little kids.
And I'm like, settle down, hero. And like just some of the gestures he made to me during the game were like gestures that if it was just him and I in a room, like he wouldn't make, right? So And when we were shaking hands after the game, I go to shake his hand and I hold it and I squeeze it really hard and I go, just so you know, I go, you're a fucking clown. And he like stops and he holds my hand and he's like staring at me and I'm like, let go of my hand. And he's like,
this is in line on the ice.
This is in line on the ice, right? And the kids are all like, Coach BX, are you going to beat up the other team's coach? I go, I'm going to beat up the whole staff.
How would it get you that mad? Like, what was he doing to trigger you?
One of our good kids, who's a bit of a disturber, he got chopped in the back of the legs hard by their big captain. And their big captain came over after and apologized to me. I'm like, don't apologize to me. Like, you just play. Like, don't worry about the adult stuff. So he chops him. Our guy goes down. He's flailing around. Referees don't see it. I'm like, slash. So I call the ref over. I go, that was a slash in the back of the leg. Like, nobody. I go, if you didn't see that, fine. But if you saw that, that's a penalty. And then the other coach calls him over. I goes, what was that all about? I go, it was about the effing slash. You didn't see any. And then we start going back and forth. And then he makes a gesture. And I could sue this guy right now and tell you exactly what he did. But he made a really offside gesture referring to my kid with like a sign that he made with his hands. And I just lost my mind.
Oh, I don't blame you.
I'm like, that's wrong. But I go, but if anyone saw this, like if any of the kids saw this, you'd be kicked out of minor hockey for good. So I lost my mind. So I told him after, you're a clown.
Yeah, but you're the type where you don't want to throw him under the bus to get fired. You'd rather just handle it like men out in the back alley.
I just buy him a coffee and have a little conversation.
Bring him to Earl's.
Yeah, no kidding. You ever heard of Polo Park?
Well, I would always think with guys who played in the NHL and they're coaching their kids or whatever, it's like some other coaches are probably like very respectful, but then there's the guys like, I'm gonna out coach the NHLer, and just you're like, buddy, just get away from me, please. Shut up.
That's exactly what it is like, right? I think. Most of the time it's respect, right? And I show tons of respect back, and sometimes there's the hero.
Yes.
He was a hero. Stupid haircut. I still remember it. What are you doing?
Is dealing with parents the worst part of coaching kids, probably?
Well, you got to be careful there. But there's challenges for sure.
Yeah.
And I think growing up where we grew up, everybody thinks they know everything about hockey, right? And to a certain degree, they're pretty educated parents. But like, think about where I am. I'm in Southern California. Most of these parents don't have a lick of any knowledge of hockey. And I have a couple moms that are telling me they don't like what line their son's on. I'm like, excuse me? You don't like what line your son's on, right? Like,
You probably have to balance it where even if your kid is better, and I don't know if that is the case, do you have to be cognizant of not throwing them out too much where they might think you're favoring them?
There's three lines. These guys all play a ton.
Okay.
It's like, I don't understand where this comes from. It's just like a little bit of the mentality down there. Like, everybody plays a ton. Like, I'm putting kids out sometimes. I'm just looking at the bench like, who's the least tired, right? Like, they're playing a ton.
Yeah.
And we're on the ice. We're on the ice 2 hours a day, Monday to Thursday, 2 hour practice Tuesday and Thursday night, and then games on the weekend. Like, we're traveling all over the place. Like, these kids are getting tons of hockey.
Yeah.
So it's just a little bit of the mentality, a little bit of the culture I'm trying to change down
there. I think, too, it's just probably shift the parenting where it used to be like, you know, if your kid screwed up, you gave him a dope slap. And now it's like a kid fucks up and parents are way overprotective, you know. You used to let your kid scrape his knee a little more. You don't see that.
Discipline's tough
for
some of these kids. Yeah, like it's hard to discipline them.
I'm looking around. I'm just checking out some other things online. What's the story when Kessler wouldn't talk to you or Burrows for 2 weeks? Giving you guys a silent treatment.
So we all play through injuries in our career, right? And the way we'd walk out to go on the ice in the tunnel was Kess, me, and then Burr. We're always in a line. And the one time, like, I love Kess, right? And he's a warrior. You know he's a warrior.
Yeah.
The guy would play through anything. But sometimes he would sell injuries a little bit, right? So he took a shot block like we all did. And to his credit, he actually found out that he had a little bit of a crack in his foot. And he's for like a month, he's walking out and he's like limping onto the ice and he's like limping. And then he gets on the ice and he's just flying around the ice like no problem. Right? And he play the game. This went on for a month. So one day he's limping out and I kind of slap her behind me. I go, watch this. And I start mocking him, like limping behind him right onto the ice. And he sees me like in the reflection. He turns around. He gives me the death stare, right? So from there on in.
He is a good one too.
Yeah. Like didn't talk to me. Like I find out through my wife and his wife, he's really mad at me and Burr. So this for about a week, there was no, and like awkward, like walk by him. Hey, Kess. Nothing, right? like in the locker room, sitting around the room, like, hey, Cass, how's it going, bud? Nothing, right? So finally, Burrows comes up to me and he goes, hey, like, I'm gonna apologize to Cass. Like, this enough is enough, right? And I go, go ahead, man. Like, but now I'm at the point where I'm mad at him because he's mad at me. So Burr apologizes, and then for another 2-3 weeks, I didn't. So we just kind of did, like, you know, the.
Two stubborn guys.
What, like, what broke the ice finally?
I apologize.
Ah, you cave, you fucker.
I had to apologize. Because what happened was in warm-up, the one game, I was so mad at him that I was shooting pucks down the ice at him, trying to get a response out of him. I just wanted to, like, I don't know, I was so mad, right? And then we almost came to blows, and Rick Bonus broke it up. And he's like, what are you guys doing? You guys are, like, best friends. And I'm like...
Not anymore.
I know. I hate the guy. Like, he's mad at me. And so, anyways, I ended up apologizing. So game within the game.
game within the game.
Yeah. Yeah, that ain't no code. People don't realize, like, you're with a guy so much all season. At some point, you're going to drive each other crazy.
You spend so much time. We were roommates for 6 years. But, like, to the Twins' credit, I spent every day with the Twins. Those guys didn't aggravate me one time. Ever.
They are so nice.
They're perfect.
They're perfect human beings. It's a...
Do they get pissed off?
Not really.
Yeah, they're just like always just kind
of
chill.
They just take it. Like, all they would get a lot of bad publicity at times, especially early in their career, right?
Where for being too, like,
people
soft.
People call them soft, call them sisters, and I knew it bothered them, but they would never complain. And I'm talking about, like the three of us sitting around in the room eating cheesecake where, like, you would feel comfortable complaining. They would never complain. They would just take it. They're, like, the two most mentally tough guys ever.
Yeah, because early, I mean, huge, high draft picks, tons of expectations. Took them a little while. Yeah. So to deal with, like, people saying you're too soft that long and never, ever have teammates, like, hearing them bitch, is that's a testament to, like, just being able to just grind through it.
Well, just even their professionalism. They were like robots in their routine where they just, everything was, you know, they earned everything.
And think about, for me as a young guy, like, we're the same age, but... They were there a couple of years before me, and I'm a roller coaster of emotions, right? Like, so good for me to see guys that are just, like, even keel the whole way. Like, it kind of brought me down a little bit, which was good.
Any funny stories? Were they ever pulling off pranks? Like, did they ever come out of that, like, their little bubble?
They did the one commercial years ago, the Swedish Twins one, which I thought was hilarious. I think it was at the All-Star game.
Yeah, the guys were ordering,
Search it. It's it's, if you know them, they were so uncomfortable doing it. And they do this stupid little dance at the end where it's so forced. And just watch it. It was funny. But they weren't like prank guys. They just sat back and... They are what they are, right?
Like the hockey.
They're just good guys, right?
Yeah. So you guys obviously so close with Burrows, you and Kessler, like... Were you ever giving him shit? Like, you're with the Sedins. You're not going anywhere. Remember, he could have signed UFA, but he just stayed there. He knew what was going on.
He got sucked in by the French coach. The French coach is like, you sign this deal right now. Like, you're my guy. I brought you up. I got you into the NHL. You sign this deal or we're trading you tomorrow. So he signs it. It was like the worst. It was like...
4 years, $2 million a year.
Yeah. Yes. And then he puts him on with the Sedins, and then he scores 30 goals. Then he scores 30 again. Then he scores 30 again. So I joke around with him. I go, you were the most underpaid guy in the league from like 2008 to 2012. And then you were the most overpaid guy in the league from 2012 to 2000. Because then he made 4.6 for 5 years and he was like third, fourth line, right? But it, like,
who'd he sign that with?
It all evens out in the wash.
He signed a big deal with Vancouver, a 4.6 a year. And then he got traded to Ottawa. And then he signed like a 2.5 or something.
Oh, I never. So he ended up getting a big deal for Vancouver. I thought it was just that.
So I got. And a guy that earned it, right? Like, yeah. He earned it. At some point, it would be sad if he retired and didn't make his money.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's a good. He's one of those guys where you probably hated him. Great teammate.
Yeah, but that's what almost makes it even funnier is that people despise someone that much, but all the teammates are like, dude, he's great. Like, that's hockey to me. Yeah, and you meet him in the summer, you love the guy.
He's like Armstrong. He was our version of Colby Armstrong, right? Like, rat on the ice, but what wanted to win, and just everybody in the team loved him.
So how did the TV work come together? Did you have to seek it out? Did they come to you? How did that all come together?
No, they came to me. I'm trying to think of the first thing I did, I think, was a Edmonton Oiler LA King game in LA just after the Spengler Cup. And that was kind of my first thing. And then they brought me in for the All-Star game, the trade deadline, and just the panel, and just trying different things right now. So it's good. Like, that dynamic's pretty cool. Like, the panel in Toronto there with like Elliot Friedman and Berkey.
He's a fucking stud.
They're just, they're just good guy. Kelly Rudy.
Chris Johnson's
like,
great guy. They're all, and they all know so much. You're like, this is sick.
So I'm sitting around like this during the in the studio and we're watching every game. There's like 14 games on all the screens and everyone's just sitting there and some guys are making notes, but we're basically just talking and like clipping things that we think we might talk about in the intermissions. And these guys know everything.
Yeah.
Like everything. And I'm like, holy crap. Like I come in and I'm in California, I'm watching a little bit of hockey, but not like this. And these guys are telling me about this, and they know everything about the Leafs, obviously, right? So for me, like, I'm like, I better be on my toes when I come in here.
Yeah.
But it's good group of guys. Like, they kind of rib each other a little like we would, and then after it's like knuckles after they get off. Like, it's awesome atmosphere.
But it's pretty early for you. Hockey Night in Canada on the panel. Like, I've seen you on there. That's sick that you've done that good of a job. I mean, I think it takes people usually a lot longer to get in the mix there for the main show at 7.
Yeah, it's been nice to get in there and just – we'll see where it goes. They want me to do more, and I want to do more. It's just the whole –
what you're doing,
LA to Toronto thing.
I know.
I can do it. Like, I can do Saturday morning, fly in, do the show, fly home. But I can't do it every weekend.
No.
So I'm going to try to do it as much as I can.
How was your relationship with Vigneault?
It was good. It was good. He was one of those coaches where at the end of his tenure, I was having a coffee with Trevor Linden. And, you know, like, when you have a coach for 7 years, there's going to be times you don't like him. And I'm kind of complaining a little bit. And Trev's like, who I thought Trev would be on my side because he was healthy scratch at the end of his career and everything. He goes, I guarantee you at the end of your career, you're going to say Vigneault was one of your best coaches. And I'm like, you're nuts. Like, I had Mark Crawford before Vigneault. I had guys, I had Boudreaux, Willie Desjardins, Torts. I had guys after. And standing here now saying he was probably one of my best coaches, if not my best. But he had Rick Bowness, his assistant, who was by far my favorite coach. So
people love Rick Bowness.
Exactly.
You must have been psyched when he got the gig there then, huh?
Yeah, I was pumped for him. I think he's coached the most games in the NHL history. Like, as a coach or assistant, it's like 2,900 games or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, he got the Bruins to like either the Cup or the conference finals back like 88 and 90, and then like he didn't get like a head coaching job for a while.
Well, then he was in Ottawa. He was the head coach in Ottawa, and he hired Vigneault as his assistant back then.
Oh, that was their beginning of their relationship?
Yeah.
We've kept you long, but I got to get your memory of a very funny incident in which John Tortorella and Bob Hartley went after it. Because you were front row seat for that one.
Oh, yeah, I was more side row.
What do you remember about that all going down?
I remember, I grew up, McGrattan and I are the same birth year, so we grew up playing together, right? So I talked to him about this because he was on Calgary. So his understanding of it is they had a really good game, the game before the fourth line, him and Westgarth. So they wanted to start them just as a carryover thing. Whether you believe that or not, I think it's bullshit. But they were trying to get a spark. And then I think McGrattan and Westgarth decided we're just going to go out for a shift and try to beat the wheels off these guys, right? So Torts comes in, and him and Hartley have a little bit of a history, and he's like, I'm so mad. And I listened to when the New York, New Jersey brawl, remember that line brawl started? And I listened to Torts' speech back then. It was almost the same speech he gave us. He comes in, he goes, I'm so mad that, you know, he's doing this and I know this guy. He's like, but I can't start the Twins. So, he's like, our fourth, your guys are going, right?
Here we go.
You don't have to fight. I don't want you to fight, but like protect yourselves. And then I think I'm like, can I go? Like, I want to go. All right, Juice, you're going. And Garrison, you're going. Garrison was big, strong.
Oh, he's got
like, not a fighter, but mutant, right? Yeah, like, so strong. Good looking dude.
Shredded.
Dude.
Yeah. Cannon.
Residuals.
Too.
A lot of residuals. Gary, you busy this weekend?
Yeah. Hey, Garrison, what's up, buddy?
Holy Christ. Yeah, Gary.
I love that you're like, oh, I'll go. So go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
No, so then I see Westgarth trying. So we had this young kid playing his first game, but he was huge. He was 6'6", college guy. But I guess when he signed, he goes, I don't want to be a fighter. Like, I'm not a fourth-line fighter. So here he is lining up against Westgarth. And Westgarth is like,
you are now.
Stick is over the dot. Like, he won't even let this kid get a stick in the dot. Like, he's over top of the dot like he's never taken a face-off before, which he probably hasn't. So he's just staring at the kid. And the kid's looking around like, what do I do? So I'm like, I come up and I go to Westgarth. And I had a couple beers with him like 2 weeks before. And I go, hey, man, like, what are you doing? And he goes, not doing anything. I'm like, okay, I know.
Here we go.
I know this game, right? So then I'm like, let the kid get a stick in, and he looked at me, and he just didn't say anything. So then I'm like, switch with me, kid, figuring, like, I just had a couple beers with Westgarth a few weeks ago in Nashville. Like, he's going to be cool with me. And that puck drops, and like I snap it back because I'm trying to go like 100% in my career face-offs, and he grabs me right away. I'm like, what are you doing? And he goes, and he shakes me a little bit, and he goes, oh, I don't know, nothing. And then next thing you know, everybody starts fighting around me, and then Westgarth kind of like goes around me and goes and finds the kid and beats the wheels off of him. And then I say that Schmid guy, who I absolutely hate. Oh, I hated
my
that
boy,
guy.
Laddie.
And I saw him going at my boy Garrison, and I wires crossed, and I went over and grabbed him and beat the wheels off of him. So then it was just, so we're coming in the room after, and we're all like laughing and high five, and played 1 second. That like it was a wait. I'm like, this is a waste of a warm up, right? And then we Torts comes in, and he's losing his mind, and he's
still furious
at the end of the period. And then he just takes off and goes down the hallway, and then we can hear all the commotion. So I go through the medical room, and I open the door, and Torts is like trying to get in there, and guys are Shane
and he's
O'Brien.
Alone. Is anyone?
I think Obi had him and was stiff arming him. Obi, the good guy, trying to break it up. Right?
He's like, let's get this game over with. So we can get to the rocks, you boys. Come on, man.
And there's like Joel Colburn and Lance Boma right there, and I'm like, and I'm just in my like span. I'm like, come into here. Let's come
fuck
in here.
They had
fight.
A big tough team.
They
man.
Did. Yeah, they were tough.
So oh, so you're still calling guys out like off your out of your
I
gear.
Tried to pull Colburn in, and I'm like, come in here and let's fight in here. I have no, and he's like,
in the dental room,
in the dental room, and I had no socks on, just spandex in my Under Armour shirt, and Boma's like, shut up, Yexa, like you're such an ass or something like that. And I'm like, get in here, let's go. And then the dentist came and was like, get out of my room. So that's kind of
so good.
I guess last thing, we got to talk about that run and just coming up short. I mean, unless you don't want to.
No, no.
You beat Chicago game 7 that run too, right? Was that a different
season? We're up 3-0 against Chicago. And then Taves goes in the media and says, we dominated all 3 games. And Taves goes in the media and goes, we're giving these guys too much respect. Like, we're way better than them. And I'm like, what? Like, that's a pretty ballsy comment. And then sure enough, they like rally off 3 wins in a row. And then we go and we win game 7. That's the slaying the dragon that Burroughs did. So then we won the next series against Nashville. Kess tells everyone he single-handedly won that series for us.
He was good, though.
Awesome.
He was incredible. Well,
who says that, right?
So, Kess.
Yeah. So then I said, well, if you won that series, I certainly won the San Jose series for us because I had 4 goals in 5 games, right? And but, guy, everyone was good, right? And then we got to Boston. I remember watching Boston-Tampa game 7 of Eastern.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And I remember thinking, fuck, I hope Tampa wins. Like, we just match up so well against them, and Boston's a little bit too big and too tough for the way our team was, because we were fast and we hit and everything, but we didn't have any like tough heavyweights, right? Like, I think Tanner Glass was our toughest guy, and he was kind of still a middleweight, and they had like Thornton and McQuaid and Char, and Luch was just dominating the league. And then when we got to them, we won the first 2 games in Vancouver, and then when we got to Boston, we just got bullied.
Oh, it's
bullied, right?
Series,
they beat the tar out of our forwards, bullied us. Like, even our parents were getting beat up in the stands, and like
really?
Well, like just getting like after the Rome hit, like Rome's parents had to get escorted out, and
I was at all the games in
that
Boston.
Hit kind of changed the tide of the series. I didn't think it was that bad, but everyone reacted so negatively towards it, and then they just built this momentum.
Nowadays, they put him in prison for that.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even as bad as Scott Stevens. If that hit happened in Vancouver, it's just such a different story. It was like the fact it was there, that was right in front of me. It was scary to see Horton like that. But it was true. It was like two different series. The games in Van. Then you guys went and got game 5.
We snuck out game 5. We scored in the last minute of the game. So now we had 2 chances to win the cup. So we like... So then some story comes out that we're already planning the victory parade or something like that. But you actually have to submit your plans to City Hall before.
Right.
So somebody takes that scoop, and it's probably like one of you guys from Boston.
Yeah, it was Grinnell.
Fucking Grinnell. So
Ari still has it on his computer.
So we go to Boston, and we have to fly the charter out with our family or just in case we win. And we get piss pumped there. And I remember like we had a chance to score in the first period. Like Henrik had an empty net and missed it. And that maybe would have gave us a little bit of confidence. And then they just wiped the floor with us. And then we went back to Van. And probably the most nervous game I ever played in my life in Vancouver, game 7. Didn't enjoy it at all. They won 4-0, I believe. First goal was kind of like, come on, Lou.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. Second goal was like kind of like, And the next thing you know, we're out of it.
Well, so. I've told the story before. I'm glad Biz brought it up and not me. But I was in the arena early that day, and I'll never forget. I was walking around, and I've never been in the arena before. And I happened to almost literally bump into the Twins, and they were taping their sticks, and they just looked tense and nervous, and then I get, you know, 50 yards down the hall out of here hooting and hollering, and the Bruins are all doing their pregame soccer like it was the middle of the summer. And I was going to ask you, like, were you guys tense going into that game? Obviously, it was a game seven, but it seemed like you guys were just too tense going into it.
Just, and that and the game seven game against Chicago, the two least favorite games I've ever played in my career. Just too nervous, like, couldn't sleep the night before, couldn't sleep pregame. Just, you just wanted the game to, you just wanted to blank game over and win, right?
Yeah.
Please, you don't want to play in it. I don't want, you know, you don't
that's
want
how I
to
get
it
before interviewing superstars like yourself. but it's been a great ride, and we appreciate you stopping by.
Man, you got to check out Juice and Kess. That's the name of the podcast.
He put his name first.
Yeah,
so.
Kess and Juice.
Kess and Juice.
Oh, he won that series for you.
Yeah, single-handedly.
All right.
This is awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Huge thanks to Kevin Bieksa for joining us at short notice. Back, like I said, I don't even remember what city we're in, St. Louis, Dallas, somewhere out in the Midwest. But he's a hot shit, man. Really enjoyed talking to him. He's a great storyteller. He's a natural with the media, so it was good shooting the breeze with him. It was also good to see Johnny Boychuk back on the ice, even if he hasn't returned to action yet. You know, he took 90 fucking stitches up by the eye, and you think he's going to be out for a little while, but no, he's out there skating already. So hopefully Johnny B will be back in the game soon. And there's some other news. We thought the E-Bug was dead. Not dead yet. Baseball Hall of Famer and former Colorado Rocky from baseball, not hockey, Larry Walker will be honored before the Avs game on Sunday. And he's also going to serve as the game's emergency backup goalie. You know what, guys? This is what feels gimmicky right here. I know everyone's saying, oh, it's a 42-year-old guy. What was he doing? Now you're going to get a 53-year-old former baseball player. I know it's probably unlikely he gets in the game, but this feels a lot more gimmicky than anything to do with David Ayers. Know what?
Well, yeah, if he got in, there'd be another emergency couple private jet flights back to Naples for some more GM meetings. And we'd be like, guys, all right, in between the three rounds over these next 48 hours, we got to change that rule. They're making a mockery of us.
Yeah, I mean, all respect to Larry Walker. The guy's a Hall of Famer, great ball player. But, you know,
was he drafted in the NHL?
Tom Glavine. Yeah. But no, he's one of Canada's proud sons for sure. But what's your take on this, Biz?
I mean, I'd love to see it. I'd be lying if I didn't say otherwise.
I agree with that.
Listen up. We've got some tea, and you all are going to be obsessed. We spoke with the Abercrombie team, and they told us that they were going to launch a wedding shop. Well, we lost it because, as you know, we are both getting ready to get Abercrombie and hitched. The whole vibe of Abercrombie these days is clothes you'd wear for a perfect long weekend, and all their customers were like, hey, we spend long weekends traveling for weddings these days. And then Abercrombie was like, we love that. Let us just give you everything you could ever possibly want and love to wear for all things wedding. So they did. It has everything. Tons of dresses, jumpsuits, pants, swimsuits, pajamas, pantsuits, and all perfectly curated for different events, bachelorettes, brunches, showers, ceremonies as a guest and ceremonies as a bride, reception, and even honeymoon. It is incredible. Check out the Abercrombie Wedding Shop on Abercrombie.com. Go shop it now.
Speaking of chicklets, I think a few people in the Federal Prospects Hockey League might have lost a few the other night. That was absolute insanity. This wasn't just a fight. I'm not sure if you saw the clip. Have we tweeted out from the account yet? Okay, yeah, we did the other day, so check our Twitter account for it. This is the first time I've seen two coaches rip their sport jackets off and look like they were getting ready to go. They were separated, but then the coach ended up fighting one of the players by the bench. Biz, you've never seen a coach versus a player before.
He got him over the boards, too. He dummied him pretty good, and then he was strutting around, went back on the ice. So you have to see it to believe it. This is just straight out of Slapshot, folks.
The coach is getting involved. I mean, that's when everything – that's when you say, what league is this? What league is that again?
Ever since we started this Rink Shrink segment, it's gotten worse. Maybe we need to cut Brian Yandel off. I think all the talk is just igniting people.
The Federal Prospects Hockey League, formerly the Federal League.
The Federal Prospects Hockey League, where the state correction officers arrive from all 50 states to look at some former and maybe future inmates.
Yeah. Prospects for what? The oil rig?
Yeah.
Maybe to be Dana's understudy for zillion beers?
Prospects of dummying someone who's trying to get into the strip club you're bouncing at without paying the cover?
Yeah. Prospect for a fucking OHL education, can't even spell.
Prospect of showing up at our pond hockey tournament and not shutting up and then falling asleep on the way home like Ben that pigeon.
We got a weird story out of the coast, boys. I mean, we get a lot of weird stories out of the coast, but this one is one I've never heard before. A player named Will Petcheneg. It's P-E-T-S-C-H-E-N-I-G.
At this point, they're just fucking with us with these names.
Yeah, seriously.
Dom's got three Z's in the last one. I mean, throw us a bone here, bro.
Well, he had his contract with the Fort Wade Comets terminated effective immediately after he alleged the team forged his name on documents in order to place him on injured reserve. It's a weird story. This guy's basically saying the team either faked or forged his signature. The player did release a statement. He said, a few weeks ago, my signature was used without my knowledge to sign a medical document that is commonly referred to as the injured reserve. The team excused this breach of my trust by explaining that it was a necessary decision to not lose another rostered player and action to help achieve their goals at my expense. Now, the Fort Wayne Comets, they had nothing on their Twitter about this. The player was picked up by Kalamazoo, per Justin Cohen. But have you ever heard anything like this before, Whit? A player having a
signature? Nothing to see here.
I'm calling bullshit on the player.
You're going to double down on the Corona, and then you're going to call this guy out. Okay, let's hear it. Let's hear it, buddy.
Well, I don't know the story. This is kind of like my first opinion on Corona.
Check the game notes first.
Well, I mean, stay hot, Whit.
This is exactly why if any of you listen to any of my points, put it this way, moving forward, if I know what I'm talking about, I'll make it clear to everyone listening. I know exactly what I'm saying. Like when we're talking about golf, I know what I'm talking about. Everything else, take it for a grain of salt. I am an idiot.
I actually, when I went to Whit's place, I walked down to his basement where he records, and there's a thing that he spins on each topic, and it's split in half, and it's just either negative or positive. So whatever it lands on, he
can
just
also be a part. I mean, I enjoy getting a reaction. I'll say this though: have you ever heard of a team doing something like this? Maybe besides like busing a Russian kid underneath the bus to try to get across the border, but forging signatures? I've never heard of a team doing that.
Well, yeah,
speaking of international flavor, I need to give a shout out. I need to give a shout out to a few guys, the imports that over in Belarus playing for the Minsk KHL team, Dynamo Minsk. Dude, these guys didn't make the playoffs. Season ends end of February. The owner, who I believe is the president of Belarus, is making them stay and work out 90 minutes in the gym, 90 minutes on the bike, and skate until April 20th. 2 months after the season ends, these guys have to go and skate and work out and lift, and nothing is it's towards nothing. The next season doesn't start until September.
Hey, listen, you're
don't ever sign in Dynamo Minsk. I got the word out for these guys.
These guys are going to have a head start on their summer bodies.
Not really, but in the end, these guys are going to go home and not do one thing because they've been tortured for 2 months with no games. And I don't think they've been paid in a little while either. So shout out to, Spooner's on that team.
I'd like to see their bar stats after that little training camp pre-summer.
Just every night you're like, oh, my God, we have training camp postseason for 2 months.
Breaking news. Just coming over the wire. Thanks to Grinnelli. President Trump announces all travel from Europe will be suspended for the next 30 days.
Oh,
saying there will be exceptions for some Americans who have been screened.
This is a wild episode.
Yeah.
Dude, and also, you got to show that this Utah Jazz guy who was like openly mocking Corona. He was in Corona's face, like outside a bar, saying "Give it to me, Corona," by rubbing his hands all over the microphones at a press conference. Then was questionable for being ill, and then started getting sick, and they ended the game. Utah Jazz. This is what's going on right now.
What's the guy's name doing that?
Rudy Gobert or something like that.
Rudy Gobert.
Dude, he got into Corona's face, and Corona put him in a rear naked chokehold and broke his arm in half.
All right, you weren't kidding in the text where you said this is a minute-to-minute problem right now.
Yeah.
We're just getting everything over the wire.
I said that to you, and Biz, literally 10 minutes later, the Sharks made their announcement. So it's been fucking insane, man, and we'll keep riding it out. But meanwhile, back to the news and a couple more. Congrats. There's a goalie goal in the WHL. Congrats to Kings prospect Lucas Parikh. He scored for the Spokane Chiefs and got the shutout in a 3-0 win. It's a pretty nice little double bubble for the goal. He had a nice little celly as well. Also, the Erie Otters hired the first female scout in OHL history. Kiana Scott took part in the International Scouting Services Mentorship Program for nearly 2 years. So congrats to Kiana. Good luck with her in the future. First
That's
female
awesome.
Scout in the OHL. Good for her.
Hey, going back to that goalie goal, is that the first time a goalie's ever scored and recorded a shutout?
In the WHL or in general? I'm not
sure. Or in general?
Yeah. I think it might have happened in the NHL before, but I can't. Damn. That's one of those, like, I'd have to fucking be
that's
raining.
That's a big night.
Yeah, it is. This is, now I'll get on to some goofy stuff. Apparently, Rob Gronkowski, a.k.a. Gronk, is going to sign with the WWE. And G was wondering if you guys know any NHLers who might be good in the WWE.
No, but I would love to try it.
You would be this.
You get to put on this different persona. You get to be, I would be the cockiest asshole. I'd be chirping. I'd be getting in fans' faces.
That was my whole point of bringing up this topic.
You'd be born to do it.
I would let those guys chop me right in the chest as hard as they could. I could take a beating. I mean, you guys watched me play in the NHL. I don't think I want to fight.
But the thing is,
I was preparing for my WWE career during my NHL career.
But they still take a beating. And a lot of people reach out to me because I mentioned something. Well, that's great for his body. And that they've changed. I guess they don't hit each other over the head with chairs anymore. That's good. I guess they don't jump off Maybe I'm misinformed, but I think they've changed rules a little. But they still battle injuries, bro. You're running into 250-pound monsters. You're getting separated shoulders. You're getting a busted-up elbow. You're getting a Whitney ankle.
Who was did the guy from the movie The Wrestler, did he win an Academy Award?
No, he should have, though. Mickey Rourke. He lost. Oh, who the fuck did he lost?
That was a great movie and a great way to show how it used to be in the bumps and bruises. And it was this stuff's just a sad movie with the amount of
because he kept doing it and he's jumping on the thumb. What are those things called?
He lost to Sean Penn for Milk and fucking Mickey Rourke definitely should have won. I mean, Penn was awesome that year, but I would have given it to Rourke.
Every once in a while, I think about the scene where he shoves his hand in that meat slicer.
That's gruesome, dude. That is a fucking gruesome scene. Jesus. Let's see. Hey, this is a very sad day for Irish Americans all over America. There's pretty much no St. Paddy's Day parades. Chicago, New York, Boston. I haven't checked Savannah yet. That's another big one, believe it or not. But, you know, it sucks, though, for people who do spend all that money to travel. They take time off work, and then they fucking get here, and there's no party. But I won't miss people pissing in my alley and all of my streets all day Sunday. I'll tell you that, Whit. That for free.
Yeah, I can't believe that. I mean, instead of there's usually what, like a solid 11 nice good fights outside the bars in Southie. I mean, you got none of that this year. I talked to my buddy Shawzy. He owns Fat Baby, Loco, all the great spots in Southie. He said these younger kids don't give a shit about coronavirus. They're out there. They're getting sent home from work. What are they doing? They're going to the bar. They're all probably all whacking each other. They're going to be getting this thing passed around the entire city. But you can't have a bunch of 25-year-old single people not having to go to work living near bars that are open. What do you think's going to happen?
Hey guys, it's Big Cat and Fight Week is here. Rough and Rowdy 24 invades Clarksburg, West Virginia this Friday night, April 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern for the first time since Rough and Rowdy 1. Every single fight will be a brand new brawler and we found the wildest hillbillies the holler has to offer. Order now to enjoy 20 amateur matchups with no headgear, plus our live ring girl contest after the final bell. These country roads are being paved with blood and grit and balls. Join me and Dave on the call for Rough and Rowdy 24 tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. Witness all the chaos with pay-per-view replay available all weekend long on buyrnr.com. That's buyrnr.com.
Hey, more bad news regarding the coronavirus. Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson test positive for the virus. So this is, we can't get away
from it. You're fucking with me.
Dude, I just read this on unless somebody's fucking with me. So,
Forrest Gump?
He was down in Australia.
By the way, I think they're the only Hollywood couple that have ever made it, right? Have you ever heard of a Hollywood couple that hasn't been divorced besides
them? Oh, yeah, there's plenty.
Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward come to mind. I know they're both dead, but...
Never heard of them?
You never... Paul Newman, Reg Dunlop, Slapshot, come on.
Woodward. Oh,
Wait,
Paul Newman.
Oh, I thought you said I didn't hear you at the beginning. I heard the second name you said.
Yeah, Paul Newman, Joanne Woodward. They were a long time couple, but
Woodward. I don't know who that is.
Yeah,
hear about them because they're not getting divorced.
Wow. Yeah. Holy shit. Tom Hanks. Jesus Christ. Fucking run, Forrest. Run. Didn't fuck.
Well, I gotta go back honestly, to Phoenix with the tomorrow. Band. The band too from Europe. This is kind of crazy. This episode. A lot of shit's happening. Seriously. This is starting to scare me.
What if we got a note like we had to keep doing a podcast or else the whole world would end and we just had to keep on podcasting for
I would be texting while recording a jet and then I'd hang up the computer real quick and just sprint over to it and it'd take me to like Tahiti.
Shit. I got a quick note. Listen, these fucking dummies out there who think I'm insulting the Rangers when I call them the Rags, that's not an insult. The New York Post has been calling them the Rags for 70 fucking years. When I was in college, I used to read the Post all the time because I live close to New York State. It's from a fucking headline.
But you don't even like the Rangers, so who cares if it is an insult?
Well, that too, but I'm just kind of educating dummies who think like I'm insulting their team when I call them the Rags. It's like, no, it's fucking shorthand for Rangers. It's like it's in the New York Post.
Unless you're a diehard Islanders fan, you cannot tell me you don't want the New York Rangers in the playoffs. The atmosphere in the Garden, Panarin, Zibanejad. If you're not rooting for them to get in, I know players are. Escrow money back.
Well, we talked about Zibanejad last episode. He ended up getting his 40th of the year the other night. In his last 21 games since the All-Star break, 22 goals, 13 assists, 81 shots on goal, 131 shot attempts, and he's averaging 21.47 of ice time per game.
What I did finally catch Ford versus Ferrari. It was excellent. Very good movie, man. Highly recommend it. Yeah, it really was. It was what you call a crowd pleaser. I know like car nerds are like, oh, they took liberty with it. It's like, yeah, that's what movies do. But I wouldn't know the difference because I'm not a fucking much of a gearhead. And also one last note. Congrats to our pal Joe Vitale out in St. Louis on the birth of his daughter. I know he's got two or three kids already. I know he added that one to the brood. Mikey Caruso made a funny joke on a little text chain the other day about it. But Joe Sarasi, great guy, one of the best guys in the game. It's a pleasure knowing him. So congrats to him and his wife and the rest of his family.
All right. Before we finish this thing up, I got to give a shout out. Norwich University, which has been a dominant powerhouse in D3 hockey for a long time. Keith Acoin played there. Just a great program. They're in the midst of a 9-game win streak with 9 straight shutouts, which I've never heard of anything like that in a competitive level before. So Tom Aubrey's the goalie. He's got 13 shutouts this year, I think, in 28 games. So that guy has to get a shot whenever he's done playing there somewhere pro. Maybe it's the coast. Maybe it's the AHL. Dude, those numbers, 9 shutouts in a row. Have you ever heard of that in anything?
No, that's not.
I haven't heard of that in soccer, and they never score in soccer. But other than that, everyone stay safe, stay healthy, root for me to get to Hawaii, you know? you gotta be thinking of other people, staying healthy, staying free away from this shit, and I guess do whatever you can in terms of staying out of big crowds. But I'm not stopping living my life. I'm a little scared, a little nervous about what's going on.
Wait, are you thinking about canceling your trip to Hawaii at this point right now? Have you moved the needle at all?
No, we said that we're not leaving unless the government comes. We're not going unless the government has like breaking news. Like,
okay,
don't leave your house.
All right, fair enough.
I'm not. I'm going. So we'll see. Maybe people will think I'm foolish. Maybe people will think I'm smart. I think there's plenty of people out there that think both. And I think there's, I'm not going to say millions, but hundreds of thousands of people listening right now that are probably annoyed of hearing our voices. So thank you guys very much. And once again, don't forget, I'm a guy who admits when he was wrong. Coronavirus, I think I was a little wrong. But watch out for the hysteria. I said the word correct. Good night.
As always, we want to say thanks to our awesome sponsors. Big thanks to everybody over at New Amsterdam Vodka and Pink Whitney. Big thanks to everybody over at DoorDash. Appreciate you. And big thanks to Budweiser, of course. Yeah, thank you to Hydrant for joining forces with us. And a big thanks to Upstart. Check them out as well. Have a great week, everybody.